Honorable members, our guests, you are welcome. Can we proceed? Let me start by just acknowledging a few apologies for an that we do have an apology from the Minister, Mr. Ndabeni Abraham, who's attending Africa conference. We also have an apology from the Deputy Minister, who's also attending. We want to record and say an apology from the acting Chairman from the Department of Communication, who's also attending the UN Week of Science. But I just thought that it's also important to bring to the attention of the Portfolio Committee that since the decision of the Portfolio Committee to establish a subcommittee that handles the appointment process for CASA councillors, that subcommittee has been formed to representative of the proportionate, and it has held its first meeting where a program has been adopted and the portfolio committee will receive report as required. It is in our view that having adopted that program, we are on course. I think it's important to send that everything else is done to ensure that we meet the deadline within what is prescribed in law, so that by the end of the contract, at least the parliamentary process would have completed within our timeline. So that's what is important, that the committee should be aware of that we are on course. Having said that, honorable members, as I said, you're welcome. There are, in the main, three items. One being the briefing by SAFO, which was a request made by the Portfolio Committee since their engagement. And I take it that SAFO is there and would also use this presentation to also do just introductions and acknowledgement of your presence presenting the sample. Well, I'm sure honorable members would remember that in that HR session we had, there was no board there from SAFO. And so you use that also. We also have received the responses from the department on recommendations that the committee has made for. And I'm sure honorable members would have had time to go through all those. And therefore we take adoption of the message. I also guide the meeting that given that members would have received the presentations well on time, that you also work on a 30-minute presentation, so that you don't take the 1 hour presenting. This will then allow honorable members to actually engage the presentation or the report that they have. So we want to create more time for the actual engagement, but in the presentation we want to highlight the key issues that we would want to take from the report. So that would be the same with regards to the department in terms of responsibility to that report. And therefore we'll take a discussion after this presentation, so that when we are done with the last one, we are sure that we are done. Is that fine, honorable members? Are we proceed in that way? If we proceed in that way, can I just check if that one is ready? Presentation check. Okay. We'll then allow yourself to do the training. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to everybody, the honorable members, the DG and our DDG. We would like to thank you, Estabi, for this opportunity to come and present to you. Before I start, I'd like to acknowledge that we are the new board. Myself, I'm Sikani Colleen Makubele, the new chairperson of SAPO, and I brought with me our retained board member, Dr. Charles Nwaila, our company secretary, Ms. Dawood Dada, and I've got with me our acting CEO, Ms. Lindy Okwele, and our acting CFO, Mr. Jabu. Before I hand over the presentation to our officials, I just want to start with some opening remarks from our side as a new board that has come into SAPO. We actually were inducted on the 1st of November, so this is really our first portfolio committee meeting. We also have not had opportunity to have our own strategy session, but we've had an intimate and intense appreciation of the status quo, the reports that have been provided to us, the briefing from both the department and SAPO itself. And if I may borrow from the words of Minister Mboweni, when he said in his speech that we are emerging from a long winter, and the post office indeed is also emerging from a very long winter, we acknowledge from what we have received to date, and the information that has been provided to the board, that we have not been performing well. Our expenditure continues to exceed revenue, although we are not indebted. We have obsolete technologies. We have an old business model that needs to be re-looked at. We also acknowledge that our organizational structure may not be responsive to the era that we are living in of technology and fourth industrial revolution. Our investment is also under threat of impairment. Our sustainability is in question today, which are some of the issues that we'll be addressing as a team. We also acknowledge that we have received a qualified audit that as a board we are taking serious attention and a look at, and they've highlighted governance issues, wasteful expenditure and operational issues that we really need to turn around. So we are also emerging from a crippling strike that has affected the operations of the entity and the balances and financials as well. And over and above that, we are faced with a gender-based violence that has been very unfortunate to have happened within our premises with one of our employees, and it's something that we are really paying close attention to as SAPO. And also we acknowledge that we have a national key project that has been awarded to us that does have burning issues and challenges that we are trying to resolve between ourselves and the relevant department, which is the SASA payment of grants. We have also appreciated the context in which we find ourselves as a new board in terms of the environment where we operate in. We are faced with technology changes, rapid technology changes. We are looking at the fourth industrial revolution. We have increased efficient competition that is swallowing our bread as a SAPO. And we also have a critical role that we need to play on the international arena, working with the UPU, with SAPOA and PAPU. And internally, we know that our human capital needs investment. It needs to be reskilled. And we also acknowledge that our competitive advantage as SAPO is shifting very, very fast from being our physical infrastructure and our distribution and retail network to being our ICT strength, the strength of our systems, our processes, and the strength of our security chair in order to deliver on the government mandate and the public mandate that we have as SAPO. We have noted as a new board the Vision 2030, that as a post office we have to become a sustainable entity that is trusted, multi-channel, an entity that is able to provide reliable and relevant postal services, e-commerce services, financial services, and also government services. One of the things that we have looked at and will continue to look at closely together with the government is to establish empowering partnerships. Partnerships that will make us financially sound, partnerships that will bring us the technologies that we need to revive the post office, partnerships that will assist us in the skills that we need to drive our strategy and our mandate, partnerships that will enable us to provide dignified services to our people. So, in the short time that we have been inducted, that is almost a week, if I'm not mistaken, that as a board we have taken over, we have defined for ourselves what we want out of the post office preliminary. We want a new post office, that's for sure. A post office that is smart, that is efficient, share a post office that is able to handle the parcels, local parcels, regional parcels, continental parcels, and global volumes out of our e-commerce strategy. We want to be a trusted and reliable distribution channel for government services. We want to be a trust center that can handle big data, big volumes, and big projects. We are already handling big data in terms of the beneficiaries that we have through the SASA project, but we need a clear strategy in order to protect that data, to move it efficiently and confidentially, and also to move money efficiently and in a protected manner. We also want to strengthen our capacity to become the logistics hub of South Africa and the region, and to have government trust us as their service delivery arm for critical services. We are looking at health, education, SASA, home affairs, and other government parcels that we know we are capable and we are able to deliver. Also, we want to reclaim our position as SAPO. We want to revive our public image. We also want to improve the confidence and the credibility of SAPO locally, regionally, and globally. We want to leverage on our property portfolio in order to create value, in order to raise funds that will enable us to fulfill our strategy. And we will address our operational issues, Chair, and also our governance issues, and increase our capabilities in order to do that. Our guiding principles, as stated in the Minister's address, also have been embedded in our preparation for the strategy session that we're going to be having, is that we want to align with government in their commitment to the highest standards of corporate governance. Performance management is going to be key in our agenda. We are also going to look at the outdated business model of the post office. And finally, we want to reiterate to you, Chair, that having looked at the 8 years report, as a new board, we are committed to clean governance. We are committed to making the South African Post Office once again financially sound and self-sustainable. And we are committed to the Vision 2030 that has been defined. And because of that, we have immediately, as we stepped in, engaged the services of the GTEC to assist us to clean our house, to assist us in implementing the programs that we have in mind that we're going to be rolling out. We are also actively engaging the AG to assist us in our action plans that we have to address the findings. We also have, as a new board, our 90-day plan to address the burning issues that have been highlighted, even from the Black Fish report that has been presented to us. We acknowledge the weaknesses that we have seen in our service delivery. We acknowledge that we have to improve in our dignified services. We acknowledge that we have to improve our facilities and equipment. We have to improve our queue management, our guarding services in the pay points. We have to assist our beneficiaries in a more efficient and dignified manner. We also have to handle the disputes and the fraud issues in an efficient manner, and we are looking into that. We'll talk on it in our presentation. We'll be doing our own surveys as well, so that we don't rely on external parties to tell us where our weaknesses are. We'll be proactive in engaging with our stakeholders and our communities to identify some of these weaknesses prior and address them before they become a national crisis. We've also looked at the forensic reports that have been done, and we're addressing them together with the AG's findings. And as I conclude, I would like to assure you, Chair, that we are going to be filling in the critical positions that are now open, And we'll also launch our e-commerce platform that has been long outstanding. Our acting CEO will talk on that. And also we are addressing, as a matter of agency, the issues that are affecting our network that result in fraud and loss and wasteful expenditure within our South African post office. On that note, I would just like to thank you once again for the opportunity to come and present to you. I would like to hand over to our acting CEO, and she'll take you through the presentation together with our acting CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and our colleagues. The presentation will cover our background as well as the SAPO investment impairment, including the action plans and responding to the AG matters, as well as our governance and operational challenges, and then we'll zoom in into our turnaround strategy, elaborating further on what the Chairperson has indicated in the opening remarks, as well as our deliverables, but also focusing on the South African Post Office of the future. Just in context, honorable members, we felt that it is important to give context to our historical background in terms of where SAPO is coming from. SAPO has not been profitable over the last 13 years, except in 2006, when a profit of 276 was made, which really excluded the subsidy that was received from the public service mandate. So between 2001 and 2012, the USO was funded at around 300 million per annum. In 2012-2013 financial year, which was also exacerbated by a long strike, which contributed to the losses of over the 300 million, resulting in the withdrawal of the USO grant as well as the 800 million as a result of a prolonged strike. And I need to indicate, honorable members, that prior to the strike and the losses of the USO subsidy, SAPO was able to recover its cost of the USO before then. And then we suffered from insufficient working capital and from the fixed cost base, which was exceeding revenue, as a result of that revenue losses through the USO subsidy withdrawal as well as the protracted strike, which led to a lot of market share losses and service providers leaving SAPO. But during 2019-20, honorable members, the USO grant allocation of 1.5 billion over the medium term period was received from National Treasury, and we are appreciative of that. And I think that gives us, it takes us back on track. One of the critical issues that was raised by the committee was that we needed to zoom in into our investment impairment. And I would like the chairperson to beg for the chairperson's indulgence to get the CFO to give us a financial perspective, which really look at the group NAV as well as the investment impairment. And then I'll also come back to cover the post office of the future. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson and the member. Last year, we had an audit finding around the investment in payment. It was rating basically coming from the shareholder side. What happened when this appropriation came into the post office, we record what we call the share capital. In their book, they are sitting with investment. Over the few years, the last few years, the total share capital was around 8 billion rand. That's the appropriation coming to start. But what has happened, our net asset value has depleted over the years because we have been operating at a loss, giving us the situation where our net asset value is less than the share capital or the investment coming from the shareholder, which needed us then to impair. Basically, what is sitting in the shareholder investment is actually now greater than what we've got as a net asset value, which is now saying we need to impair our net asset value. I need to emphasize that, Chair, that to change the situation around, we need to obviously change the post office to the profitability. Without profitability, we forever continuously deplete the net asset value. So to mitigate that, we need to generate profit so that we stimulate our reserves. We've put projects in place to do this particular, Chairperson. I'll just use I'll give some example of a few. The first critical one was the funding of the USO mandate, which was done last year for the next 3 years over the MTF period. It's going to go a long way. As we know, Chairperson and the members, that there are some areas which is basically we cannot make commercial sense in terms of our investment, especially in rural areas. where we are always going to get a negative return on this particular investment. So it was critical that we get this subsidy back. And we appreciate the department. It's gone a wrong way in actually reducing that particular loss. We're getting 500 million rand a year over the next 3 years. The next one, Jefferson, is to focus on our investment in infrastructure. Jefferson, there has been an inflation in the infrastructure investment over the course of the year. We're using the old technologies, there is a lot of inefficiency. So the focus when we got the funding was actually to ring-fence some of the funding, to upgrade and to bring some status in the infrastructure so that we improve efficiency. Core of the thing we want to do this one is actually to bring back the lost market. There is an undoubtable lack of confidence from our consumer to the performance of the post office. And to turn that around, we need to put proper infrastructure so that savings are actually running in time. We are nowhere the storage of the parcel, we are the distributor, so parcel must get to the consumer in time and in real time. We're also looking to focus on our 2030 vision. Jefferson, the core of our 2030 vision is actually around digitalization of the post office. We're looking to focus more on the e-commerce as our turnaround in the parcel business. You know this particular business is a low margin, but we feel that it's our future because we've got scattered investment all over, and we can piggyback this to actually yield a return, and this will actually improve our net revenue. We also need to rationalize our infrastructure. We've got a lot of infrastructure which is underutilized. We need to make sure that our assets are being swept across the country. This is looking to rationalization of our branch network. We're looking specifically to urban area where branches are not financially viable to actually close some of those branches or match to make sure that we keep our operating costs as low as possible. We have got a challenge of staff costs, and with no doubt we need to get the staff costs done. We've started a project to rationalize our staff costs, and first of the phase one was involving the VST. I must say that we've got a very positive response from our staff to actually get them out of the system without retesting. We're looking at close to 800 people actually apply for that, and that is going to go a long way in reducing the cost of labor. Jefferson, we're also looking to all our security costs. It's been escalating because of SASA. We want to get a different approach to security. Where we've got guarding services, we're actually rolling the infrastructure in the branches. We also was taken away by that thing which happened in Cape Town, where a customer was killed in our branches, and it indicated some lack of security protocol in our branches. We've actually put a lot to actually upgrade the infrastructure in all our branches so that our customers feel secure at all times. The funding chairperson, which is the next slide, I've covered it. We've received close to 8 billion rand over the last few years from the department, which basically, chairperson, because of the hole which we've got in operating expenditure, we couldn't use majority of that fund to fund our infrastructure. Every time it was coming through, it was used to fund operating activity, therefore exaggerating, making the situation of the loss of operation even worse. So there has been an inflation in investment in infrastructure, and that's why we say our core focus for the turnaround is putting money on the infrastructure. The other issue, chairperson, is just the issue of the post bank. I need to highlight that because we've got this restructuring, when we take some of the units within the group, it's actually on itself called restructuring. Wherever there is a restructuring, there is a cost associated with that. Most of our net asset value, I'm talking about about 4.6 to 4.1 billion, is actually including post bank as part of the group. So if we take that particular one out, it actually takes the group net asset value to 454 million, rand, which is it's far low, chairperson. With that, then, it means that it's going to be difficult to get to the capital market to raise money because we can only raise to what is the net asset value. So we need to get a way to stimulate, to bring net asset value of the business of the group to where it was. I think that's a mechanism we all need to work on to and to work on the better model then going forward. It also compromises our liquidity position. You must note that most of our liquid assets is sitting with a bank. Our bank has got a liquidity investment of 12 months, and we speak with looking at about 8 billion rand just in the banking savings, of which 5 billion rand is saving from the stock fell and all on mamas in the rural area. So the liquid of the group is sitting with Portland, and it's been a strategy that we stimulate our growth through transferring the profit through the tax planning also to the process. And it's worked very smartly. As you will see, that reserve from process has been growing over the years through subsidization of the cost from process to be able to operate in this particular area where it's not commercially viable to operate. Jefferson, to operate where we operate, it does not make a business sense. So if you want to penetrate to this and bank market, you need someone to subsidize your costing so that you can access that particular market. I think then from there I'll present it back to the CEO to continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CFO. So we've put into, just to highlight action plan to respond to our material uncertainties, or maybe let me just zoom in into the governance implications. The transfer of business from SAPO to Post Bank was gazetted with effect the 1st of April, Chair, in line with the corporatization requirements. So we'll be working very closely with the department to support our future financial sustainability, as the CFO has alluded in terms of the balance sheet impairment as a result of the separation. So collectively we need to find a sustainable solution to make sure that none of the entity is worse off because of the policy directive. So we'll be working together in finding an alternative solution. I want to confirm to the committee that to date we've already signed the SLA between ourselves and the Post Bank because our business model is based on a shared infrastructure model. In terms of our action plan to respond to material uncertainty on an ongoing concern and investment impairment, honourable members, we have signed, as the Chair and the CFO has alluded, our contract with SASA, which is really, we see it as a catalyst towards our sustainability. And to date, we are actually paying approximately 11 million beneficiaries. And based on our future, current forecast gross revenue expected for this project is about 1.9 billion per annum. And then I think I've spoken about the resuscitation of our USO grant, which is to the value of 1.5 billion. And then during the 18-19 midterm budget adjustment, we were further allocated 2.9 billion to fund our future capital expenditure with more than 1.8 billion liquid assets at year end, Chairperson. So we, as part of our turnaround strategy, as the Chair has indicated, our future lies in parcel growth. If you look at the international best practice in terms of global postal operations, parcel is increasing and more people are buying online, and SAPO wants to ride on that e-commerce wave. So as SAPO, we will be launching our e-commerce platform this December, which really begins to respond to the increasing demand and positively contribute to our revenue. And Chairperson, if you look at where SAPO is at the moment, we are basically a net importer. And as a net importer, those that are bringing stuff into our country, they are making more than we do. So we need to start cultivating a culture of export. And that is why within our e-commerce platform, we will also be incorporating an e-mall, which is a platform that will enable access to market for our emerging entrepreneurs, because we want to actually become a platform, an exchange platform to take South African-based products to the rest of the world because of our market connectivity, because of our global network, because we are connected to more than 192 global postal operators around the world. So that will be a catalyst not only for SAPO but also from an SME or enterprise development chairperson. We've also rationalized our branches as part of our rebalancing to minimize rental costs of approximately 114 urban branches. And reasons, Chair, being that in the past, we saw a proliferation of lots of post offices exceeding our mandate in terms of point of presence. We are supposed to be present within a certain kilometer radius, and we realized that in the past, there were lots of post offices and lots of leases that were really not profitable for the post office. So that rebalancing is done responsibly, Chair, because we still are within our mandate in terms of the point of presence, in terms of the Postal Act. So we have not in any way deviated from there, because I've heard lots of members complaining about the closure of certain post offices, and that is a business strategy, it's a business decision, but we're not going to compromise any service, Chair. But we needed to make sure that there's rationalization, there's amalgamation of post office, also improving and enhancing operational efficiencies by ensuring that we are present, but we also there's value for money in the manner in which we render service. And then the group's restructuring on a phased approach is also going to be adopted to address the challenges of low productivity due to high staff numbers. CFO has alluded to the VSP process. which has exceeded our expectation, and we are quite humbled that the process happened in a very smooth way without having to actually do retrenchments, Chair, because we are appreciative of the socio-economic imperative and the high unemployment rate in our country. Also, the improvement of the regulatory enforcement by ICASA to address the encroachment in the reserved area. Chairperson, I'm happy to announce that SAPO has actually won the case. We received our the finding from ICASA in relation to the encroachment into our reserve areas by some of the operators, and I think that is also going to take us a long way. But we are also appreciative that there is such low barriers to entry in terms of our, especially on the logistic component. We need to step up our game. We need to also be efficient. We need to offer our customers value for money in order to remain relevant. And again, as much as a Schedule 2 institution, we appreciate that there is a public service mandate, Chair, but also there's a commercialization component, and we want to ring-fence that and also advocate for exemption on the commercial component of it in order to engage on off-balance sheet initiatives as well as public-private partnership in order to leverage skills and technology investment in key areas like e-commerce, Chairperson. In relation to the AG findings, I think the committee, they dwell into the report, but just to give the committee some assurance in terms of the interventions that we've put in place at SAPO, we've established an MLAP committee, which is the Management Letter Action Planning, where every month we are zooming into that. To date, we've given the issue of the resolution of some of the AG findings. At SAPO level, we deliberately wanted to leave it at 28% because we are still awaiting the report of the internal audit, because all the interventions that have been put in place, they need to be tested through the internal audit process, and once that is done, one is able to then say these issues have been put to bed, Chairperson. And then also we monitor all the implementation on a corrective action on a month-to-month basis, Chair. But also the audit committee, at every quarter we put together a report to the audit committee. The chair alluded to the fact that we've also solicited the expertise of GTEC to assist us on the refurbishment work as well as the resolution of AG corrective actions through the GTEC and National Treasury, Chairperson. In terms of our governance and operational challenges, Chairperson, what earlier on I alluded to the fact that we've already signed the agreement, the SLA, between ourselves and Postbank. Then now we are actually looking at our review of the transfer pricing, which should be based on a fair market value, and that is the work that we're currently dealing with, Chairperson. We also need to also fast-track the filling of critical vacancies because the EXCO is literally 90% of EXCO are acting positions, Chairperson, and the board is actually placed that as one of the key priority issues within the 100-day plan, Chairperson. As I've indicated, the VSP is underway, and we are happy to announce that we were able to receive 776 employees who will be leaving at the end of the month in November, Chairperson. We have actually, in relation to the lack of capital investment in the past, we have 1 billion rand that has been ring-fenced for capital investment, specifically, Chair, focusing on revenue-generating initiatives. There's a huge IT infrastructure refresh, looking specifically on the post office of the future. We have post refresh, hardware, software refresh, but more importantly, we've decommissioned IT solutions and licenses that are not adding value to the business as part of improving our efficiencies internally, Chair. I've indicated that our case that we've launched with the ICASA on encroachment, we've won the case as SAPO, and I think that will take us a long way in terms of defending what we think is rightfully ours. But more importantly, it's about looking at the innovation and game-changing initiative to really gain our competitive edge, because we are mindful of the fact that no one owes us anything. We really have to roll up our sleeve and step up in order to remain relevant, Chairperson. One of the key issues that was highlighted by the AG was the issues of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Chair, I want to assure the committee that we have FMC, which is the Financial Misconduct Committee, where these issues are being dealt with, and where necessary, the consequence management certificate of the incident is completed by the business unit, indicating the rationale for the expenditure. If then there is disciplinary action required, then or mitigation thereof, But what I can assure the committee is that we just don't condone irregular expenditure without consequences. And that is something that we are focusing on, and we'll be reporting to our incoming board in terms of what we've done to date in that regard. But more importantly, Chair, we also have identified that there were a lot of IT-related contracts that led to some of the fruitless expenditure. We've cancelled some of the contracts. We are recovering some of the monies, and we are also in court as I speak. I have already submitted an affidavit in court just to recover some of the contracts that we feel that they were irregularly entered into. We are also dealing with some of the issues that were highlighted in the Forgenics report that we proactively commissioned with Reserve Bank when we started picking up some of the fraudulent activities, Chair. So we are dealing with that, and then more important is about the improvement of the controls in terms of the cash management at cash pay point, Chairperson, because one of the key issues that was raised by the Auditor General was the issues of acknowledgement and cash management and the recons, Chairperson. So we needed to do system integration between the cash dispensers and our integrated grant payment system in order to ensure that all of that at real time, the report, there's a feedback loop into our SAP system in order to make sure that there is no limitation of scope. So that is also being dealt with, Chairperson. I've indicated that the POS and hardware and software over the counter, because that impact on operational efficiencies is something that we've already dealt with. We are also fast-tracking the omni-channel platform, which is also enabling the digitization of the post office. Our enabling infrastructure will catalyze platforms for revenue generation in terms of the e-commerce, e-government services. It will also enable our agility and scalability, Chair, and then quick turnaround, uptime at post offices, and also managing queues in terms of quick turnaround, and also ensuring that there's a pleasant experience in terms of the customer experience when they come to do business with the post office. At the core and at the center of what we are doing, Chair, we rely on a solid and stable network. So I felt that I needed to give the committee some perspective in terms of where we are with the network upgrade project, which is, Chair, is a key pillar to our strategy to become a delivery arm of government. We've actually, to date, as I've indicated, we see the investment that we've received from the government to not only enable us to disperse grant payment, but we believe that that infrastructure must be optimally utilized by the state to actually deal with all other government-related services like your chronic medication with Department of Health. We are already distributing books, Chair, in Limpopo as well as Northern Cape. We want to do this across the length and breadth of our country. We are already at advanced stage with Home Affairs around the passport and identity service renewal, and again, all of that is linked to connectivity. So network upgrade is a critical pillar for us, as well as the paymaster services and all other government services. And we believe that this should be a policy instrument. One of the key dependencies that we want to canvass is a policy shift and a policy change where SAPO must be viewed as a face of government. So it's something that we want to canvass through our honourable members and our committee and the department chairperson. We also wanted to give perspective in terms of where we are with Telkom in terms of the turnaround on the project status across the provinces. As you can see, Chairperson, we had actually given them timelines because we wanted to have all post offices and hubs connected by the end of the year, and this is being managed on a weekly basis, Chairperson. In terms of our turnaround security infrastructure plan, the CFO alluded to the fact that at year one is part of the response to the SASA grant payment. There are certain once-off cost in terms of card manufacturing and a high cost in terms of security. But since we've been monitoring the robberies, armed robberies and the burglaries, Chair, we believe that we need to put security infrastructure and technology as a mitigant instead of warm body guarding services. So where we are actually rolling out a technology infrastructure, you're seeing a reduction of the physical warm bodies. And we are beginning to see a decline in terms of the robberies, Chair. Also the protection, cash protection devices that we've put across all our post offices, we are beginning to see a result in that regard. So we really believe that technology matched with warm bodies can actually take us further. Obviously, we can't dwell more on our strategies and mitigation on security for obvious reasons, Chairperson, but I want to give the committee the assurance that we are beginning to see a huge decline because of some of the interventions that we've put in place. But I also want to give credit to our crime intelligence, to our security cluster that are able to intercept some of these crime syndicates, and we've seen a lot of arrests, both from the support point of view, our employees, SASA employees, and even FED at some stage, and some have unfortunately lost their lives. But as a committee and as SASA and SAPO, we are saying we have zero tolerance, and our employees are updated every Wednesday to make sure that the standard operating procedure is not compromised, and that if they are actually lured by crime syndicates, that we'll arrest them, and they will be charged and they will be dismissed. So they are aware of that, and they've seen some of those incidences happening, Chair. So I just felt that we also needed to elevate one of the key strategic infrastructure that we have at the post office that has not been optimally utilized, the trust center, Chair, which is accredited by African Accreditation Authority according to the ECT Act of 2000 as a preferred authentication service provider. We have this tool, Chair, and we believe that the state can actually utilize these authentication services in terms of electronic signature. Even the legal fraternity can be able to utilize that, and we want to actually drive aggressively this product in terms of increasing our certificate sales, government boards, Chairperson, and the document signing solution and identity solution. We have this, and it is safely housed, primary sites in Somerset West here in Cape Town, as well as our secondary site at State Security at Musanda in Pretoria. So we've met all the international standards in terms of security for this service, and it's something that we want to drive aggressively, Chair. And then there are certain investments that need to be made in order to put it on par with international standards, Chair, and it is articulated on page 17. In terms of our staff optimization, I think we've spoken about this, Chair, but it is driven mainly around the VSP, but also where there are opportunities and there are position. We're focusing on internal recruitment to make sure that we are filling and we are rebalancing and recruiting, but where there are unique skills that are needed in line with the 4IR, and we will go out, but we are working with NEMISA to actually enable us to build a capable digital army within the post office so that we can be able to respond to the future needs of our organization. I've highlighted some of the critical vacancies that are needed in terms of our sustainability, Chair, but also I want to give some assurance that some of the critical vacancies, especially in tightening up our governance requirement at internal audit, we now have 26 operational internal auditors. Every region has a dedicated team looking at the regional and decentralized work, ensuring that there's strict adherence to governance protocols. So we're happy to report that that has been done. We've also beefed up capacity within a finance, Chair. We have three senior management positions that have been filled, all of them qualified chartered accountants. In IT, we have Scrum Master and two project managers that were appointed to really assist in dealing with these operational challenges within the IT to enable us to support the SASA project moving forward. One of the key issues that was raised by our chair in our opening remarks is the brand repositioning, because our brand value has declined a lot, Chair, and we really are working hard, but it really starts from internally, where we really have to convert and turn our internal staff members to our brand ambassadors. And we thought that as the new board is coming, we need to also aggressively embark on a national roadshow just to share the Vision 2030 that the chair was talking about. But more importantly, it really is about having presence, working very closely with community radio stations across the length and breadth of our country to make sure that there's dialogue with our communities, and to really talk about the work that we do, the community work that we do, and then there are social media campaigns in that regard in order to make sure that our presence and there's connectivity between ourselves and our clients and the people that we serve, Chair. But more importantly, we really, as a corporate citizens, we are mindful of the fact that the issue of gender-based violence is a societal scourge. Chair made reference to the incident that happened here in Cape Town, which is really a microcosm of what is happening in our society. And as a corporate citizen, we are also standing up to say we want to really be visible in becoming active in dealing with the scourge of gender-based violence. And I think it's a societal issue, and all of us have to raise our hand to contribute to the eradication of the scourge of gender-based violence. We also are beginning to see our effectiveness on social media, and obviously ours is to beef up our customer relationship management, but at least we are seeing more activity where we are getting positive feedback. Obviously, as a post office chairperson, we run, we manage 3 million letters a day, as well as 300 parcels a day. So we can't guarantee 100% that everyone will be happy, but our objective is to make sure that ultimately we have to make sure that everyone who does business with us is happy, or they feel welcome and they feel appreciated, because we really appreciate them doing business with us. So we'll continue improving on that, Chairperson. But by virtue of capacitating regions, we now have fully fledged regional general managers where there's leadership on the ground. Now we are able to play effective oversight, because the issues of governance, of authority, responsibility and accountability have been actually strengthened on the ground. And there are certain catalytic initiatives that, in terms of our turnaround, where we are actually driving the issues about getting everyone to buy into our vision, to understand why they need to do what they are doing. So that rollout work is underway, Chairperson. Change management is a critical issue to really deal with issues of morale within our staff. Revenue generation, something that really undermines, because we are excited that our revenue is growing at 20%, but at the same time, even our expenditure, and we need to make sure that our revenue exceeds our expenditure. So cost containment, efficiencies, effectiveness, these are the issues that we need to deal with. But product diversification, as well as optimization of staff and our property portfolio as well, strengthening our internal control through our governance in protocols with the MLAB and the BPC. We've introduced a business performance committee where we are zooming in onto our performance management, and we are beginning to see improvement, Chairperson. We made commitment to the committee that come year end will be sitting not less than 75%, and we are still committing to that, Chairperson. And then the business cases, we have a capital investment committee now that really focuses on all the capital capex projects that are put forth with clear business case and a clear return on investment. Earlier on, the chair spoke about our presence not only in the country but in the region and internationally, the work that we do with UPU, especially the operational readiness for e-commerce, the work we're doing around Securex. We were earlier on last month I indicated that we were licensed with a CDS, a custom declaration certification, which is one of the key pillars for e-commerce, Chairperson. So we are very excited about that. We'll strengthen our CRM process to deal with poor customer experience, and then productivity through our laptop and a refresh on IT infrastructure, Chairperson. Those are the key issues that we are focusing on. But the turnaround 100-day plan that the board is focusing on, key critically, is around governance. It's about getting the buy-in on the HR on the 2030 vision, but turn around our IT and sales, as well as the e-mall and e-commerce implementation and implementation of our point of sale and CRM system, and then we sustain, because we believe business transformation will be a key pillar for us moving forward. Earlier on, we spoke about the key pillars of our strategy, which is about premising our strategy based on the four key pillars: us becoming relevant and reliable, and also have a reach across the length and breadth of our country, but more importantly, our resilience, our capacity to innovate, to deliver integrated postal services, sustainable development targets, and our ability to adapt, because if we don't adapt, we will die, Chairperson. So the last slide really talks about our turnaround in terms of the technological advancement, and I will focus on year 1920 as well as 2021, where we appreciate that we are now dealing with techno-savvy clientele, a clientele of the 21st century. Some don't want to have a physical interaction with us. We need to actually focus on digitizing our process, having a virtual post office, So we are actually, for this year, we are focusing on a post office pay platform, our mobile app, Chairperson, to enable everyone to be able to do business with us virtually, the CRM platform, where it's Amber Chase, the work that is already commenced, where it's green, it's the things that are already in place. As I've indicated, by December, we would have launched our e-commerce. And the automated mail processing issue is about improving our efficiencies. IPS integration in the process of implementation, Chair. I spoke about the ability of the customer to be able to track parcels from cradle to the doorstep and also incorporate the SMS notification. Those are the key innovations that we are bringing on board. I spoke to the issues of the trust center, the e-mail process, which is a platform to enable access to market for our SMEs. The SupplePay platform, and again, we believe that the cash is expensive, it's unsafe. We need to start embarking on cashless solutions for our grant beneficiaries, and we will be working with community radio stations around education awareness, and we are hoping our honorable members will also be supporting us in reaching out to the constituencies to get a buy-in, because we believe this will take us a long way. If M-Pesa in Kenya can succeed, so can we do that, Chairperson. So on the logistics digital platform, we believe that our strategy in terms of the operationalization of our e-mall, in order to operate successfully, we need to be hosted in a secure environment and have a sustainable revenue model using our customer-friendly application. So Chairperson, on page 27 is basically the diagrammatical view of how we want to actually work within the logistics place, where we are looking at the parcel or cargo end-to-end in terms of the flow and visibility, and also ensuring that there is integration to the post.net, which is an integration within the UPU with all other global postal operators, using both IPS and DPS, which is the International Postal System and the domestic postal system, to really ensure that the e-tailers and the operators in terms of the custom authorities are spoke to CDS, as well as the airline engagement. So all of this needs to be integrated in order to improve efficiencies, Chairperson. So ultimately, we want to see a common data exchange standard, but more importantly, real-time transmission, something that we didn't have in the past, as well as the real-time receipt and data which needs to arrive before physical item in order to make sure that there's customer satisfaction and that there's an elimination of the violation of parcels, because the client will know exactly where their parcel is at in a more efficient and effective manner, Chairperson. On the deliverables, we are dealing with the issues of sustainability, we are dealing with the digitization process, but also improving all the shortcomings in terms of the SASA, addressing the dignity issues in terms of the Black Sash matter, Chair, and we appreciate the work that Black Sash has done, Chairperson, because it keeps us on our toes, and we see them as a strategic partner in actually ensuring that we do right by our people, because at the center of what we do is Batupile principle, and we see ourselves working hand in glove with them to make sure that we really are stepping up and also are equal to the task to service our people. And also the implementation of the Fogenix report around the card fraud. And Chairperson, I'm happy to announce that we're seeing a huge decline in that regard, but you can never be complacent, because we are approaching a festive season and the crime syndicates will be up and intensifying their tactics as well. We need to be ready with our partners in ensuring that we eliminate and reduce such risks. I think I spoke to all these other issues, Chairperson, but more importantly, the issue that was also raised by the committee around the 174 staff members with criminal records, I raised it last time and I want to reiterate it once again to say the legal opinion that we have received. Obviously, in South Africa, Chair, there's something that we call restorative justice, and if people have served time in everything, you can't, and we appointed them knowing that they have a record, you can't then dismiss someone on that basis. But if someone is misled and lied and was dishonest, then you deal with that in that regard. So that's how we are dealing with those particular matters. But a case in point in relation to the affected employee who willfully knew that he had served a sentence but misled his criminal conviction, he was dismissed on the basis of dishonesty, not because he had actually committed he was convicted in the past, Chairperson. So I thought that I needed to rectify and verify that. Then we are continuously working on the Not In My Name campaign with the staff to make sure that everyone, not only just the issues that are happening to our customers, but how we treat each other as employees as well, and management treating their staff in all the shop floors, in the head office across the regions. We are actually now elevating the issues of gender-based violence, sexual harassment in the workplace. So we are dealing with all those issues, Chairperson. Lastly, Chairperson, I think one of the key bugbear has always been the dilapidation of our building as the post office. We wanted to share with the committee in terms of the look and feel of our prototype, in terms of the way we want to look moving forward, and a post office that is friendly, that is also mindful of the fact that we want to do business even with people with physical disability. They must find it easy to come to our post offices. So we've also shared the prototype with the members in order to understand where we are going. And as the president has spoken about the district-based type of development, and as post office, we've also identified 3 pilot sites where we'll be showcasing the post office of the future. It's going to be Itekwini, Durban, post, the main post office. It is a heritage site, so the issues of refurbishment is more a restoration, but also bringing in a bit of smartness into each person. OR Tambo District, the Mthatha post office, we will be also dealing with that. And then in Waterberg, also in Limpopo, we will be also piloting those 3 sites. And then as we move forward into the future, the new look and feel of the post office. So I thought that we wanted to unveil that. If you can please show the honorable members in terms of the look and feel of our post office of the future. So in terms of our way forward, the turnaround, I think I've covered the issues around the security cost, the staff cost, our rationalization of property, and the logistics cost are one of the key issues that will deal with the sustainability of the post office. Thank you so much, Chair, for your indulgence.
Thank you, for the presentation. I will now open up for members to engage the presentation. May I take your hands? Honorable Tembu, followed by Honorable Tembu, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Mkwena. I'll take our hands in that order.
Thank you for this one. Good things to everyone in the house. Firstly, let me welcome the presentation from the Chairperson's remarks, and also congratulate the new board, knowing that they are equal to the task. To me, presentation, it gives a clear picture of where are we going to. I'm happy with the presentation, looking at the past, where we're from. I hope it will tackle all the corners that are problematic in our areas of operation. There is one thing, Chairperson, that need to be clear. The issue of saving to all mama abahlala emakhaya, maybe it needs to be unpacked a bit, so that uma umdekubuza ngayo ukwazi ukuyichaza kahle ukuthi kwenzakalani kuyona. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join my colleague in congratulating the newly appointed board. Atbona, a woman leading and sharing the board, Sisi Fezu Ngomama Fezu. Chairperson, I hear that there is a service level agreement signed between SOPA and the Postbank. What I want to get more are the implications.
because they have said in their presentation that they are not profitable. Is this a move of having the bank away from SOFA not affecting them financially? I just want their future plan so that they are, we see them, that they are making profit out of their operations. I also want to state that a post office is the nearest service point to rural people. I, as a politician, cannot support the closing of some of their operations in rural areas. What we need as politicians is a safe and a healthy building for their services to be rendered to our rural people. They have said they are claiming 11 million plus beneficiary checks. But out of what is happening in their rural post offices, because those are the highest risk centers, the rural post offices, where our gogos and our tajongkulunkulus are targeted by these attacks. I would recommend, Chair, that they conduct a risk assessment on those rural post offices, the ones that are in rural towns. Having in mind is the Dutya post office where I come from. It is a health hazard, it is also unsafe. There may be others that I have not seen, but I'm just highlighting the one that I see every day. I would recommend a risk assessment that it be conducted. I'm also coming to the point where they say they are in a brand repositioning program. How are they planning to get feedback from the people that they serve? Because if you don't get that feedback, the most dangerous person is the person that just keep quiet when he's not satisfied. Because we have started influencing people to move away from post office to go to other commercial banks, since the post office is becoming a high-risk area. So how do you get feedback from those inquiries from, I hear the point of going to radio stations or rural roads and whatever, what else will you do so that people get you talking about post office? They also talk to you about what they expect from you. What we need, and you are planning to have smart post offices. What we just want now is a safe post office. We once cried when we hear that mama of that lady, I don't want to call the name, when she said, I have told my girl about all the high risk areas, the shipping, the whatever, but I did not tell her about the post office, that the post office is also a high-risk area. We tried when we hear that. Chair, when the CFO was talking about audit, whatever, giving us a report on audit, he was telling us about 181 repeat findings. Can we get a background of that? Because I get it that only 28% have been attended to, whereas there's 181 repeat findings by the Auditor General. Can we just get a background? And also, on page 23 of their document, where they are saying they are on a building maintenance program and also a security infrastructure program. How I wish that can be fast-tracked. On page 29, where they were talking about the just the incident that has just happened in the Cape Town post office, I want to recommend that if it is possible, let all their staff be vetted, be subjected to vetting. A screening must be done. I also would like to know the reaction of the unions with regards to that, because we must be sure now that they have agreed, they are reluctant or whatever. We need to understand the reaction of, we understand that the area is unionized. What's the reaction of the unions with regards to that? But Chair, what we need are the services from the post office. Services that will satisfy your clients, because these rural communities become your clients. The last question that I would like to pose is, are you owning all the buildings that have the West Post Office? Or is there somewhere that you rent or you do? Because if the building is unsafe, it will be easy for you to move from that building to another building. Are you in ownership of those buildings? Let me pause there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Sapa, for your presentation. Your Chair, I've sat here since 2014 listening to the South African Post Office tell me year after year that they're going to turn it around. All they need is another billion, or another 2 billion, or another 3 billion, and then they'll turn it around, because they have all these fantastic plans, post offices of the future, and e-commerce malls. All they need is another 2 billion. Okay, next year, another 1 billion. We've been promised turnaround after turnaround after turnaround. The last turnaround, I'm getting very angry, Chairperson. The last turnaround plan I saw promised us, as a nation, promised us that if the post office got their last 3 billion rand bailout, they would return to profit by 2020, Chairperson. This document now tells us, in fact, that the post office is not going to make a profit in 2020, that loss is going to be as high as 1 billion rand. We should be all completely alarmed by this, because it means that chairperson after chairperson of the post office that has come before this committee with a turnaround plan or annual performance plan, a strategic turnaround plan, has lied to Parliament repeatedly, because there is no sign of this post office turning around. Chairperson, I've got the sense of deja vu. I've sat here this morning listening to everybody speak, and I've heard nothing new. Oh, there's one thing, but I will ask that question. But most of it, I've heard nothing new. I've heard board after board, CEO after CEO, tell us the same thing. And yet this organization never turns around. Now the unanswered questions that we have about, we were going to have Treasury come here and explain to the portfolio their rationale behind splitting the Post Bank out of the Post Office Group. From what I understand in the document from the presentation, and I don't need Treasury to tell me this now, Chair, the reason why this is happening is because if Post Bank stands with the Post Office Group on its own, the Post Office Group can't support the Post Bank at all. It can't be a holding company. It can't qualify to be a holding company. So the implications for the Post Office of pulling the Post Bank out are dire, but obviously everything depends on this service level agreement that you're talking about. The whole profitability thing seems to hinge around that, and there's very little detail on that, so I'd like to echo my colleague on the left, if we could have a lot more details on that service level agreement which you've concluded, and whether you believe that the financial benefits that will flow from that service level agreement to the post office will be enough to compensate for the loss on your balance sheet of the post bank. Because otherwise, and let's be honest with the South African public, we're then looking at a situation where until 2030 we're going to be bailing out the post office to the tune of billions of rands every year. And if that's the case, then at least let's have some truth to it. Chairperson, let me welcome you to your position. You know, the first I heard that we had no board was in the media. And the first I've heard that we've appointed a new board is in this committee. So, you know, it's wonderful as a Member of Parliament to get my information in this way. Ma'am, with the greatest respect to you, I have no idea who you are, and perhaps I'm ignorant and I'm at fault here. And the makeup of your board, perhaps you could just give us an idea of who you are, why your skill set is particularly appropriate to chair an organization like the South African Post Office. And obviously, no person can be all things to all people. The directors that you've surrounded yourself with, the skill set that they bring. For example, the last board that we had come here included the CEO or chairperson of Zanussi Communications, for example. So I could see why she was included in the board. So if you could just give me an idea of what your board looks like. And obviously your specific skills in terms of fit for purpose. You mentioned an outdated business model of the South African Post Office. I must just ask the question, what was Mark Barnes doing in the last 3 years if he wasn't changing the business model of the Post Office? I thought we had a new business model. I thought we'd adopted this. I thought we were moving forward in this direction. And that's why we were giving you billions of rand, was to support this business model. But now it's outdated and you tell me that you don't have another one. Then in terms of post office security, and I'll quote, I'm not sure, I think it was either CFO or yourself, ma'am, that said this, I quote, "something we're paying attention to as SAPO. And it's only because of Clarence and the poor young lady that was murdered in that way that the spotlight has shone on the post office's building." Well, let me tell you what SAPO has been doing to me personally. I put in a written question in the fifth term based on an inquiry from a resident to say, why has Mondial Post Office closed down? There was no other post office in within the 5 kilometer radius. Why had Mondial Post Office closed down? We told them it was for refurbishment and it would open a couple of months later. It never did, because the same man, and he really is, if it was in legal terms, LPP, a vexatious litigant, he never lets go. He walks past Mondial Post Office every day and he sends me a mail saying, what are you doing about it? Not the post office, me, Mackenzie MP, what are you doing about it? I then got another written reply saying work would begin in November. Well, Mr. Americo de Sayers has walked past Mondial Post Office and he said that there's nothing happening, and he sent me pictures. It is a dump site. People sleeping, vagrants sleeping. I mean, the place is a mess. So, not only are you coming here to this committee and telling us stories that we've heard before, you're also lying to me in written questions to Parliament. Now, in case you don't know, it's an offence to lie to Parliament. Perhaps you could confirm, I'm not sure what penalties are, but it's an offence to lie to Parliament. If you come and you give me an answer to a written question that says Mondial Post Office will be fixed by the 1st of November, it had better be fixed. Because someone acting CEO is lying to you in your organization. I then visited the Weirder Park Post Office, again, because one of the councillors is on me, go and visit this thing. Your staff are working in the dark. The reason why they're working in the dark is it's 40 degrees in Weirder Park, and the air conditioners aren't working. They've reported it repeatedly to the facilities people at Post Office. Nobody's come to fix the air conditioner. So your postmaster is sitting in an office with the lights off, because if she puts the lights on, it gets simply completely unbearable to work there in terms of the heat. So permit me to come here with a healthy dose of skepticism and a great deal of anger when you're saying you're paying attention and you're fixing your post offices and you've upgraded the security. No, you haven't. It's a shocking state of affairs what your post offices look like. So I don't believe a word of that. Then every time you come here, Sato, I'm going to ask the same question. Is the automated conveyor system, the mail sorting system at the Johannesburg International Mail Centre, is that up and running? So we have to answer yes and no. But every time you come here, I'm going to ask you the same question, because you have given me dates and timelines by which this automation was supposed to be up and running. Then in terms of your property portfolio, I remember Mr. Barnes coming and making a great lot of noise about the amount of money that could be gained for the post office by rationalising your property portfolio. That seems to have disappeared from the pages of your presentation. I just want to ask if that sort of study is continuing and if you've made any advances there. Then in terms of improved regulatory enforcement, as I understand it, the monopoly was given to the South African Post Office because by having that monopoly, you would then be able to generate sufficient revenue to meet your universal service obligation. That was the thinking behind that at the time. Since then, have you done any numbers on that basis? So if there was 100% enforcement of your monopoly and Postnet, for example, weren't allowed to run any of the post boxes, would you then be making enough money, given declining mail volumes, would you then be making enough money to be able to cover your universal service obligation without coming to the side of the taxpayer for more money? Then you made a lot of reference to the digital architecture omni-channel platform. I've never heard of this thing. If you it seems to be a cornerstone of your IT strategy. If you can just give me some insight into exactly what that is. Then you basically alluded to two communication or marketing type campaigns, the one Not In My Name, which by the way I think is a great idea, it's a great campaign, and the other you said you've obtained reputation and communication expertise. Can you tell me if those are internal or external? If they're external, who are the companies that are involved in that? And I particularly love the last slide because I like to be left with a bit of hope, and that is what the post office should look like. It is what the post office should be. And I know we all have competing priorities, but let me, as a disclaimer, say I am a born and bred Cape Townian. But whenever I drive down the 6th Street in the centre of Johannesburg, I look at the legislature on my left, that magnificent sandstone building with cenotaph in the middle, and on the right I see a decrepit Risk Street post office. And it's a magnificent building. I mean, it's right at the heart of our financial system. Please, can you give me an idea when we're going to do something to take that jewel in your crown and polish it up and restore it to what it should be? Thank you, Chairman.
I have
one
more question.
Let me then take note of the other hand, so that when I give you to speak, so you can follow that order. Honorable Matthews, I saw him before.
So you're taking a second bar?
No, I'm just those that I didn't know. So that after I've spoken, they continue.
Oh, okay.
Honorable Mulan and Honorable Kubeka. Honorable Mulan.
Thank you, Chair. Welcome. New Chair Sapo and the acting CEO, and thank you CFO for your presentation as well. Look, my first comment is going to be the state of the post offices, especially in the rural areas. I'm glad someone mentioned the Tanjore. I was going to mention the Tata, and I'm glad it's in your presentation. Places like in Popo, in the Free State, you know, small towns and rural areas, which is really where the post office should be most relevant, because the post office is a transport and distributor of not just goods but information, and it's going to be key that it plays that role. But let me then go on to my next thought, which is, it's really just a thought. And I'm glad you're hitting the right note when you're talking about e-commerce and platform-based business and so on and so forth, because I think that's where the post office needs to go. And I honestly think that the reason why the post office has not been doing well is because you have not gone in that direction. So, you know, the business model has been stuck in the past, in just transporting parcels. That's a big issue because, you know, if you take South Korea, for instance, South Korea Postal Services, which they're taking the post office services, they put it under ICT, the Department of Technology. And I think it's because they recognize the centrality of transporting stuff in an e-commerce environment. So I'm really excited that you're beginning to speak that language. It's a pity because, you know, I also want to hear the rationale of Treasury that separates Harpo from Postbank, because it just makes sense that SAPU must move in that direction. Again, South Korea must. They've got a banking system, they've got insurance services, all falling under the post office. And I think we should have found a way, Chair, even in policy. You know, when we did the banking amendment bill, these are some of the things that we should have considered. Because I think it's important that we must go into that e-commerce space. We must go into the banking space. We must be able to transport money, transport goods. You know, I'm glad you're talking about medical supplies and all of that. It's important. It's extremely the best businesses in the world today, Alibaba, for instance, in China, it's based on that model. And this is where revenue is. This is where the money comes from. So we're stuck in a business model that is still reliant on physical, and it's just about letters and so on and so forth. It needs to expand and become bigger. So that's the and then the other thing is the documents. You know, post office should be at the center of a data vault. And it would solve a lot of things, because what it would do, so for instance, you know, someone was saying to me, if you get a ticket in a small town called Grootstad in the Free State, and then you drive the same day, you get to Bochum in Limpopo, you get the same ticket. But they don't know, they because there's no system that speaks from one to the other. And if we had a vault that was managed by SAPU, that had a database that could exchange information, so that you have the information, medical information, identity information, criminal information, of everybody that lives in South Africa or comes into the country, we had a central information point. And that is, you know, I'm just throwing an idea, because I think I'm reiterating the fact that SAPO should be at the center of the fourth industrial revolution, because you are the distributor of the most important goods in the country, which includes information. And I think if we could solve those issues, in the last meeting when we were speaking to SABC, I made the point that I watched the presentation of someone who was making the point that from 1845, industrial revolutions have changed one to the other. But in 2001, when they really became digital, when we saw the rise of Google, the rise of Apple, the rise of the technology that we're now using, the rise of the iCloud, that is when real businesses that have transformed into e-commerce began to see growth. And the ones that did not comply with the new development declined. And I think SAPU was one of them. The SABC was one of them. I strongly believe that ESCOM was one of them. It's we're not in tandem with the rise of the technological age. So I'm hoping that all of these things, in the notes that you were hitting today, that we'll be able to to raise questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, maybe let us welcome the report and also of the new leadership of the post office. Chairperson, I just wanted to check here if, because I want to know that the first
In fact, this is why I want to raise this. I think the first responsibility of the new board is to make sure that there are appointments in each and every position that they take, because that's where you will find there's a problem. Because when you look at page 11, Chairperson, of the food left and waste expenditure, it tells you that you can't have a manager that is going to perform something without reporting it to the executive. So the executives are the ones that are responsible, but also the executives are the ones that are going to submit a report to the committee. Who is it going to implicate? Because someone must take responsibility. Someone must be held accountable of what has been happening. So I think the first thing that they need to do is to make sure that they appoint people to their respective units so that people can take the responsibility of their own units. And also, Chairperson, I wanted to check if I appreciate the fact that post office is integrated into supplying books and meds in other areas in conjunction with departments. But I also wanted to check, because I heard the acting CEO saying they cannot be written by another country. That is, maybe I'm not sure what is it that they are doing, but do you benchmark yourself with developed countries which have transformed their own post office? Because then you'll know where you are as the post office and where is it that you need to be. So those are the things that I want to know. Also, Chairperson, in terms of closing off some post offices in some areas, are they intending to maybe bring new technology, improved services in those areas? What is going to happen so that we know those people will still be serviced accordingly? And also, Chairperson, what bothers me is that I speak for myself. I live in an urban area, but I still get posts that are not meant for me. Posts that are supposed to go somewhere, but they come to my house. And then I wonder what is going to happen to those people who are in rural areas. If I am in an urban area and I still get posts that is not meant for me, what is going to happen to a person who is at a rural area where there is no street, then you must be able to bring post of those people. So how are they going to handle these situations? Because then we need to know how our people are going to get service from the post office. I thank you, Chief.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Let me first welcome the new board. I think it's only fair that we also give you an opportunity to do your work. But because we have been promised a lot before you came, so don't mind when we become a bit harsh on you. You must know it. Those who preceded you, so they created an impression that all the boards in post office, when they come here, they lie, and then the next thing, there's a new board, they start afresh. So it's like it's a merry-go-round. But let me welcome you and assure you that you are very safe in this house. And maybe I must start on a positive note to say the post office, like my colleagues have said, is much closer to the people, particularly the rural people. Now, there are many players at that level. I don't know how you are integrating your services with them, because I acknowledge and appreciate that you want to go digital, it's okay. But you can be digital at big cities and towns. What about the developer's office level? Because you must also go there and say, at that level, will the digital improvement have an impact on that post office that is in a rural area? I'm not saying you should not do it either. I'm just saying you balance that as you improve, because in most areas in the cities it's okay. You need to move with speed because everything is faster there. But comparatively in vast rural areas, also look at mechanisms that can take them up. We know it will not happen as quickly as we want, but at least there should be something. In most post offices, now that you have SASSA with you, there's a lot of hawkers and sellers around the post office every time there's a SASSA payment. And I don't know how do you then have a business relation, because these people, they're small business people, but they are doing business within your area of control. Part of strengthening the security, it's also people who participate in the area, because you can't have your security tightened when you don't know all the people who are doing business around your premises. So I'm saying some form of engagement with them and find a way if they are organized, so that you are able to also define their role. There's nothing wrong if they do business with the elderly people, but a lot of criminals also take advantage of that, because there's many people there, and then what happens? So that's an area that I think you also, that's why I said at least today I'm trying to be on a positive side, so that next time you'll not be a new bot, I'll be a bit hard like Honorable McKenzie. So that the second issue of rationalizing your branches. You see, a branch is a very broad way. Some might think you're rationalizing the offices. If you say a branch, you mean a post office in a particular village. In your context, I assume that's what you mean. Now, this service is the reason we want to know more about this rationalization. It's not more about which ones are profitable and which ones are not profitable. Some of the offices may not be profitable, but may be providing a necessary service in a very rural area. Maybe the only point of contact for those people. So have you, maybe I'm happy that Professor Maile is also with you, because he has worked with a lot of traditional here. Because that's a sector that you need to work closely with. In the process of rationalizing your office, because we don't want after you rationalize the revolt in those rural areas, because now you've taken their point of contact altogether away from the people. the other area that I wanted to comment on is on your the encroachment, where you said you've also won the case, but you did not further say what are the implications of you winning the case. What do you stand to benefit? Yes, you have won the case. What next? Will Postnet or other services then move away from encroaching? What is the other thing? Just be clear so that all of us. On the branding, the post office, it's a very good idea, because so far, I agree that post office has lost a lot of credibility in our community. A lot. When we grow up, we used to, everything that we do will be around the post office, whether it's a chain store, everything else will be around the post office, which means the post office was the center of attraction. Now the post office is dilapidated, people no longer care about the post office. So maybe as a proposal to you, because I said today I want to be at least moderate. I've heard you speaking about the roadshows and so on. And it, you see, as parliamentarians, we need more of a plan so we can monitor that plan. You see, what you presented today is the general view of what you want to do. But from where I'm sitting, I think we need a clear plan. I think what Honorable McKenzie was raising, though he raised it in a very harsh way, but it's the reality, that if we have a plan, then we are able, Honorable, to follow up on each and every step that you said you're going to do. So maybe from my point of view, I'd say develop a plan so that you say within this period, and that plan must indicate that by when we think we would have turned around. And then every time you report, then you're able to show the challenges on implementation and so on. So maybe from where I'm sitting, I think if we have a clear plan, and possibly the other area that I was a bit worried about was raised by my colleague, the separation of the post bank and the post office. In your presentation, CFO, is that it will make you lose to a level of net asset value of 400 from 1.something. Are you just talking to us, or are you persuading whoever is the decision maker to consider that? Because we are not, at our level, we are not decision makers. Whether the post office is merged or is not merged, it's not our decision. Ours is to monitor what they do after that. If they merge it, ours is to monitor whether that merge is working, is profitable. That's our role. So presenting to us is good, we know, but at least I hope in your response you'll also indicate how you also influencing that process, because I don't think it's in the interest of the public, but if it's a financial viable decision, there's very little we can do, but I hope you are also influencing because if we say, should the post office move away from you, there's also a service level agreement. I'm getting a bit confused. Every time you come here, there's a new presentation on this story of the post bank and the post office. Something is not being told, and I think we'll dig much deeper to get to it, because every time there's a new story. The last time we were told the reason Mark Barnes left is because we're merging. And then he left. Okay, the Mark Barnes story is history. We are here now. The story now is changing. At some point, the presentation was saying, no, we would prefer the model internationally that the post office and the post bank, they always go together. In the same committee, we go again, the thread is splitting again. Actually, what is the truth behind this? Maybe when the department comes, it will tell us what is really happening. But from where I'm sitting, I looked at my notes. There's about three stories that have been told about whether the merger or the separation. So I think maybe it's because we have not requested clear plans and programs from both sides, so department and post office, so that we know exactly. If you do this, fine, we'll monitor how far you are, whether it's working, because we'll still be here and monitoring. And maybe the last point, if this whole bank post office story is not clear. My next question would be, now that you have SASSA with you, what will be the relationship between SASSA and the bank? Or is that part of the service level agreement that you are signing? So that we become then very clear of the direction where we are going. Because now that SASSA is with you, there's a process of a bank. Does the service level agreement include the SASSA issue, or it's about you as a post-bank? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe, firstly, also let me join to welcome the new board. Because, Chair, if you can recall, in the last portfolio committee meeting, we were critically raised the challenge, actually, of not having the board actually in this entity. And also the issue of acting after acting, as you can see, also the CFO is acting and also the COO is acting. That is the reason that I want maybe to say the board, you are welcome, and I think you are on the right track or on the right path to be ready for the challenges of this entity. When you are talking about this entity, you are talking about the nucleus of service delivery. Actually, you are touching the nerve of service delivery. Why I'm saying this? I'm saying this because when you are talking about the post office, you are talking about health, it's also there, as you are raising to say, you are willing even to deliver the medication at the right doorstep. Education is also there, because you are saying you are willing to deliver, it might be textbook or stationery, whatever. What you are talking about also, you are talking about the clear social issues when coming to the pension of our elders, or our own gogos and kulus. You are saying you want to deliver even the parcel that the people or the masses of us who are expecting, those who don't have something to go and fetch it or to have something with this technology, in order that they must receive those things. So that is why I'm saying, when you are talking about the post office, it's direct to our masses. So which means the board, it needs to have the objectives, the aims, and the goals that they want to reach. So, Sian, welcome about it. Why I'm saying this? I'm sure you are coming because now Honorable Mackenzie is raising the frustrations of the last fifth parliamentary, maybe years. Now we are in the sixth. So you are aware that there is a huge task that it is in front of you guys. The safety, it's one key element that it needs also to be there in your sight, in all angles, because you are going to use the issue of dealing with those elderly with the SASSA matter. So you can imagine the safety, in order that whatever that have been transpired in the last time, it won't be there at all also. But those things, it will be there when, definitely for sure, you are having that business model that will give you in a relevant a direction, in order that whatever that you want to correct, it will be on the right track. So I'm saying the infrastructure that is there, it will be the one who will convince
this entity to say this infrastructure is in a good condition in order that whatever that we need to do or to deliver, all people or all the masses which are supposed to use that infrastructure will be in a safer place. And when I'm saying that, all those things also will meet the issue of the budget. No wonder you are finding the issue of the budget, or that's where the hiccups will be there, in order that now other people must see how best can we assist this entity in order that it can have whatever that is willing or wishing to give our community 100% service delivery. So when I'm saying this, I'm saying the task is on this entity. We are convinced to say now, as a start, positively so, you'll make it. Whatever the hindrance that will be there, also we must understand it, because now at least AG have given you the line of light to say things where are wrong, it needs to be corrected. So all of us will move in that direction in order that whatever that you are willing to achieve, it needs to be like that, because us as the portfolio committee is to play an oversight and also support this board and this entity in order that it must have a way forward that will bring our democracy in a right a path or direction. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Mr. I will be giving you an opportunity to respond to the points made by members. Just maybe to emphasize the point, just unpack, especially on the separation, the 4.1 billion difference in terms of who were able to get that money if finance minister's approach is that we're not going to get any other money. So I'm raising this so that even the department will speak to that point, because in your presentation you say you'll engage with the department on the financial facility. But the reality is, based on what you presented, you talked to 4.1 billion. Whether you call it recapitalization, but we usually call it the bailout, because that's what it is. So if you can just explain that point, with an understanding of a possibility that you may not be a bank controlling company, as the presentation says. Maybe the point raised by Honorable Tego on the percentages, I think it's difficult to look just at the percentage. 28% may seem to be something, whereas if you were to look at the actual items, because the AG would expect us as a committee to follow on those that are specific. And if you don't have that plan now, at least get us a sense of when can we get the actual action plan, so that we are able to see that the deadlines you have put of January 2020 are they feasible based on what needs to be done, so that we just avoid what McKinsey would have raised of being told the same thing, but maybe nothing happened. And I'm sure you'll also, speaking to the other revenue sources, I think Honorable Mkwena spent time with that, but the issue would still come back on the enabler. And the legislation is really the issue there. But unfortunately, the markets do not work that way. They'll be ahead of you. By the time you get in to try and look at the matter, you're just behind. Probably also around timelines there, anything that's being introduced from the side in engagement to the department, and when can we expect to see something in that regard? So I'm just framing up those questions. Maybe clarify on page 15 what seems to be a duplication, especially when you talk about security. What that means. But also on the issue that relates to matters raised by the AG. Supply chain management becomes an issue at gathering, what does it mean, expansion of contracts? And in some instances, it has been actually on extension of existing contracts that government or entities have been found wanting in that regard. Maybe just from an issue of the workers again, page 17, you say lack of skills in terms of human resource, and then they are looking at recruitment. I think an assurance again there of whether you've exhausted your internal skills audit and the reskilling internal before you even think of people outside there. Maybe the other point really relates to what one would call the project flow chart that you put up on page 25. Just to echo the words of Honorable Mulala, that even on that one, because that gives the bigger picture of where you start. But to monitor work that happens in a decade without specific milestones at a particular time would not help the committee much. So you still need to unpack that and give the committee a report so that we're able to monitor exactly what happens. Otherwise, you can wait for the decade and only realize at that point that actually nothing much has happened. So I'm just saying as you respond, it was just to come up with positive questions. You will be guided by yourself, maybe you'll do the same, or change the director so that you start, or you'll just give and wrap up. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for your questions and your comments. We have noted them, and we appreciate the reprimands as well. We will take them even from the previous board and the admin team that was here before, because that helps us in our planning, that helps us in being conscious and cognizant of what has been said here, how you want us to conduct ourselves, how you want us to present and follow up on issues. So we take that on a positive note, and we trust that we can go back and do things differently the next time we come and present to you and the portfolio committee chair. But Honorable McKenzie raised a very important question to say, who am I? Which I thought was a fair question. You know, you can't have a captain of a ship that you don't know who they are. Do they have a criminal record? Am I going to drown me in the sea? So I really have to explain who am I before I can give an opportunity to my colleagues to help me answer the question. I am a product of the ANC government and the ANC struggle. I'm a product of the ANC-led government in their intervention to uplift our people. I'm also a product of this department which I am serving today. As I said, my name is Tsikani Colin Makubele. I'm from Limpopo, Giyani. That's where I grew up. When I finished my matriculation, I had a loan from TEFSA to study BIT informatics at the University of Pretoria. And I was very privileged and blessed to have Telkom South Africa give me a scholarship to go and study computer science in Malaysia. I spent 4 years in Malaysia studying BIT, they call it information engineering. I came back, I served Telkom for about 4 years, and I believe I am a case study of what it takes to make an investment in education to our rural areas, to our children that are underprivileged and disadvantaged, because if you take a long-term view, we always come back to serve the very government and the very departments that give us these opportunities. Post that, I went to work for South African Breweries, which has changed names since then, and I am a SEP consultant certified, and I implemented systems that has to do also with e-commerce in those years. I have a master's in business administration. I also have a project management diploma from the University of South Africa in IT. I'm also a Prince 2 practitioner, which is a project management body that looks at government-led projects and the methodologies on how to implement that. And I did start, please hear me carefully, I did start with my PhD And I did start with my research, but I did not complete it with the Institute of Da Vinci. I had to stop because of marriage and children and business commitments about 3 years ago. But the focus of the PhD was to look at the rolling out of broadband in rural areas and underserviced areas. I am an entrepreneur as well. I've run businesses that are logistics focused and also ICT focused. So at the moment I am studying a foundational course in investments and try to brush up my financial side. So in a nutshell, that's who I am, and I'm very proud that I've had an opportunity that has been given to me through the department, now the Department of Telecommunications and Digital Technologies, and I'm very privileged that I can come back and serve them years later, and hopefully their investments will, you know, show fruit. I hope I will not disappoint them, and I will not disappoint this committee in my service of the chairperson. To answer your second question, Honorable Mackenzie, I believe the minister has applied her mind very carefully in selecting the board that serves with me, the team that has been that constitutes the board of SAPO as we speak, in terms of the diversity that she has and her team and whoever it is that is involved in selecting the board. They have really applied their mind in terms of diversity in gender, diversity in skills, diversity in background, and diversity in race. Because we live in a society that is very diverse as South Africa. The kind of skills that you will find amongst ourselves is finance skills, there's audit skills, there's banking skills, there's property skills, investment skills, ICT, there are people that have been in HR, people like Dr. Noela that have been serving in government for years with administration and management skills, and there are people that have had logistics businesses and experience. So these are the skills that we believe the post office of the future will require. These are the skills that we believe will help to drive the new strategy and the agenda of the department as a whole. So I'm hoping that this answers your question on who I am and who constitutes the Board of SAPO. Thank you, Chairperson.
The Chair can also welcome the Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie.
That was from the Chair. For Honourable Mackenzie to still come back and say, friend, and welcome.
Thank you so much, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members. We appreciate the input, and I want to also echo my Chairperson's sentiments. Honourable Mackenzie, we appreciate the frustration, and I want to give you my assurance that I will physically go to Mondio, because before I came in here, Bongani, my head of property, assured me that the contractor is on site. So now, if he has misled himself, then I'll have to duly deal with that issue. But I do appreciate also Honourable Members that the issue of the refurbishment work, it's one of that sore thumb of the post office across the board. And when we spoke about the piloting of our prototype, it's not that we're going to ignore all others. And again, I think we are appreciative of the fact that an urban customer is demanding, is techno-savvy, has alternatives, so we have to live up to that standard. But a client in the rural area relies only on us, so we must be a one-stop shop, if I may call it that way. So we really are mindful, and we'll have different tiers of our post office in terms of where we are, the location, the demographic profile we're servicing, because it's all about relevance and the reach. So we need to be true to those strategic imperatives. In terms of servicing Omama Basemakaya, how we look at even our role in paying the SASSA grant, we really see ourselves as an instrument, as a catalyzer for local economic development. That is why we are saying we have to play a role in enabling local economic development, because we said initially, because I know people were saying maybe we are dreaming to say how can we use even the very same SASSA grant to empower spaza shop owners. In the past they were complaining that people travel, because when they get the money they still drive to town,
and yet they leave the spaza shop here because the demand doesn't exist there. So through this process, we need to draw those feet back into your local shops and empower and create. People must safeguard and protect themselves as a community, like how we used to do it, even in standalone post offices. How do you work with our entrepreneurs and hawkers so that they also safeguard and protect the post office as part of that communal living engagement that we used to be as part of Ubuntu? So those are the kind of things that we need to do. But moreover, Chairperson, I think over and above your above-the-line engagement in terms of print media, in terms of electronic media, I really believe that local leaders can play a very crucial role in terms of becoming our eyes and ears. And I'm saying over and above the work that the likes of our Black Sesh are doing, we also need to start doing mystery shoppers, which I think Honorable Mackenzie has been doing very well. He keeps me on my toes. I get all these complaints and everything, and I appreciate that, and I want all members to really keep us honest. And I think last time we shared the list with all the regional general managers, because they need to know who their leaders are. They need to also appreciate that there will be these mystery shoppers, because that information is so powerful to enable continuous improvement on our side. So it's something that we welcome, but ultimately we're saying, yes, we are going to be working. Earlier on, the chair spoke about the GTEC at National Treasury, because with our panel of service providers, AG picked up certain issues, and I decided to put a stop on it because I don't want another irregular expenditure. So we have to piggyback on the GTEC at National Treasury, hence some of the delays, Honorable Mackenzie. But it is a priority, and the board has made it clear it forms part of the 30-day, of the 90-day, the 100-day plan, Chair, moving forward. So those are the kind of things that we need to deal with. But also, members, the issue of vetting. You know, after this incident, we said with the state security to then say, can they please evaluate the vulnerabilities on the IT side, but even looking at our policies and our HR policies, because ultimately there's Labor Relations Act in our country, and our policies must not be in contravention with the constitutional imperatives. We need to take a step back and be sober in terms of how we apply and make sure that we are constitutionally compliant. And in doing that, we also needed to beef up a security policy, which we're going to be tabling to the board to approve that. Because remember, in the post office, it's like in a bank. Someone who has a criminal record, who has been found to have robbed a bank or committed a crime, you can't be a teller. So, and the Act, in terms of the SAPO Act, is very clear around theft, around violation. Those are criminal issues. So it's about how we craft our recruitment policy, our HR policies, and the security policy that is tied to that, in order to create that tight control in terms of who works at the post office. As we are driving the e-commerce platform, remember, we'll be dealing with high-value products and goods and services, and people need to trust that post office is a trusted exchange platform to handle high-value products. So those are the kind of things that we're doing.
If you will allow me, I would just like to order how we are going to respond to you, because I don't want us to miss any point, if you don't mind, to guide my team on how we perhaps could answer this efficiently. Okay. I think if we can start with how the questions were asked, it will give us a better idea of where we are, so that we don't answer questions randomly. Maybe we'll start with Honorable Mthembu's question. I see you've covered that. Honorable Mthembu, I think you're covered on that. Okay. Honorable Grebo, she spoke about the SLA between SAPO and the Post Bank. Can I have you speak on that, please?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the SLA, remember, even the minute the Gazette happened in terms of moving Post Bank as a division to become a fully fledged entity, the business model is premised on a shared model. Therefore, there need to be a clear service level agreement in terms of how we engage and service one another as a compliance and a governance issue. But more importantly, in terms of the SASA contract, belongs to the group, to SAPO. But the SASA contract is comprised of over-the-counter,
which happens in our premise, in the SAPO branch network. It happens at CPP, but also through, which is the cash pay point, and through the NPS, which is the National Payment System, which is a banking platform through the Post Bank. So there are certain components in terms of norms and standard and industry compliance issue that is expected of us to deliver through the Post Bank, and we need to make sure that those issues are articulated in a form of a service level agreement. But more importantly, group IT, human resource management, or security and investigation, there are certain support functions that we share collectively, and the transfer pricing around how that is done, including the utilization of the post office infrastructure. So the transfer pricing speaks to those principles, Chair. But over and above that, even the Ministry, and I think the DG will elaborate on that, the premise of the shared model in terms of the integration is something that will continue, whether they are with us or they are separated, because there is a greater appreciation of the business model in terms of the best practice that Honorable Mugwena spoke about, Chairperson. Thank you.
Can we now talk on the rationalizing of our facilities, especially looking at the rural people?
Just to make sure that we are not in the border.
Yeah.
Yes, no, I was just leaving you to welcome you.
Okay.
But we're back to the portfolio committee. Otherwise, there can be a problem.
I won't take over your meeting, Chair. Okay, I apologize.
All right. I take it that what you asked for has been understood. That you go to each member, and I'm sure that the president will then deal with that so that we can keep the flow of the meeting. So I'm just saying that this will take your request. For now, we'll check.
Okay. I appreciate it. I just want to make sure we answer all the questions.
No, you'll have your questions. You'll answer the question. But I'm saying we have established the principle that you thought of going to each member's question so that there's no member who says my questions are not answered. So that we understand. But I think you now know that that's what needs to happen. So can I check from here?
Yeah.
All right. So if we do that, that makes the meeting easier. So if you can then get to the next question that was asked. I see the board member also wanted to answer that first question. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Member. How does SAPO get feedback from the communities and so on? The board has established committees on the board, and I chair the social ethics and stakeholder engagement. And the first project, which we're going to roll out beginning of November, is to go out during the grant payment day with the opinionaire. We interview the grannies in relation to, you know, how far do they live, and if they live far, how did they come here, are there any challenges they're experiencing here, and so this is the work. We are complementing what the Black Session has done, as we have acknowledged. After this exercise, this is led by the board, after this exercise, we then will meet the Black Session leadership, the people who have done this work, so that we begin to collaborate with them and work with them to ensure that we restore, you know, that dignity of the elderly people in those areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the rebalancing, Honourable Members, I want to assure you that the rural branches, and in terms of the closure and the amalgamation and the rebalancing, it's been mainly urban branches, and because that's where you saw a proliferation and the mushrooming of lots of post offices within a 10-kilometer radius. And we saw a lot of wastages in terms of our financial sustainability. What I assured the Honourable Members was that we will never deviate from the Act in terms of our regulatory obligations. We need to make sure that our point of presence is intact. And again, the guiding principle is about strategically located, meeting the act, because we are licensed to do certain things. Therefore, we can never deviate from that. What had transpired in the past is that people got used to have post offices around the corner. It's easy to just cross the road, and it's so comfortable going to this one. But even the one, two step, three step down the line is still within an acceptable period. And I think it is important to understand that in the context of the constraints in the national fiscus, all of us must do more with what we have, stretch the rent, but at the same time, don't compromise the service standard. And that is what I'm trying to do with the team at operations. But also, we are open to suggestions and everything, but we've been very meticulous in the manner in which we do it. And I think the relationship with our community radio station, our local leaders, to communicate better, because I think SAPO suffers from weak communication. Sometimes we focus on doing and never share, and I think that is one of the weaknesses that we've also identified. So we will do better on that one, Chairperson. So that rebalancing, that network optimization, there's a policy that was approved by the board, the implementation is according to plan, but what is also very exciting for us, most of the profit-making branches are the rural branches, most of them, but at the same time, with the allocation of the USO grant, there's 569. So going back to Honorable Member, where she was saying, even if there's no profit being made, you still have an obligation to render. That's where the USO, the 569 ring fence, because it's about servicing the indigenous communities, but making sure that they still have access to the service. So that's how we're dealing with that one, and Honorable Members. And then the ownership of building, ma'am, mostly the ones that are in malls, they are leased mostly, and most of the ones that are standalone are actually post office owned. And I think we've taken a position also, you know that we used to be even in Eco Point as a head office, left our own building fully paid, and decided to go pay millions and millions to someone's building. We went back home last year because it's the right thing to do. It makes business sense to do that. And then also, you saw that most of the post offices were abandoned, and people just went and leased other people's building. And I'm saying, who does that? Because our objective should be to strengthen our own balance sheet and to take care of our own assets and sweat it and optimally utilize it. So that was the guiding principle around how we're dealing with our network and our distribution, Chairperson.
Other issue, I'll just talk about refurbishment and the status of our infrastructure and our branches, Chairperson. We acknowledge that they are in a very poor state, and it's one of the reasons customers are not coming back to our branches, because there is a lack of safety, there is a lack of tools of trade. This year, Chairperson, from the next coming year, we put 541 million specifically to do the refurbishment project. But because of the delay in some of these execution of these processes and some of the tender processes, we needed to cancel the tender and to reissue it separately. But we are on course, and we understand that we need to prove the state-of-the-art branches where people can be dignified to be associated with their infrastructure, especially in the rural area. I need to emphasize this issue of just using the term closing of the branch. Maybe it's a not the right concept to use. We actually rationalizing the branches. We look into the urban branches and say, what is the cheapest way of keeping the same presence? In other words, in terms of renting the infrastructure, we'll find that we bring containers. It's actually trying to minimize the cost we're spending on the urban area. It's not, we are not touching the rural area. In fact, our strategy is to expand our footprint in the rural area, because that's where we want to concentrate, and that's where our market is. All this funding, Chairperson, we take this very seriously, the 181 audit funding from the AG, Chairperson. We took two critical decisions. There was to build the capacity into our internal audit. We have employed across the country people doing internal audit specialists to exactly look to the internal control process, because that's where the challenge is, and to actually stimulate and upgrade our internal control. We also have what we call the tracking mechanism. I'd like, Chairperson, in the next meeting that we present that tracking record for all our audit findings, because we assign each executive to be actually responsible for each of these particular audit areas. Mr. McKenzie raised a very critical point of having to promise every year the turnaround and not materialize. The issue there, Mr. McKenzie, is actually we've got a proper plan, and I'm quite confident that our plan is top structure. But the issue comes with execution. What we need to do this year, we actually put what we call the consequence management. Again, you cannot achieve the strategy if your organization is not stable. If your ESCO is not stable, you're acting too much, there's a Hollywood there, you cannot achieve the strategy. And that has been the history of SAPO. Also, you've got the cost base, which is too high. Wherever you receive money, instead, if you delay the project, you end up on operating activity and you execute no growth or infrastructure growth investment. So we're looking into that. That's why we say ring fence and fill the critical position and put the proper model to actually turn the business around. Our turnaround model, we talk about what is actually the SAPO model. Mr. McConza, our turnaround model is actually around the e-commerce, and that's basically where we want to be. It's a powerful, we want to stimulate our e-commerce, because that's where we see the growth of the post office. Thank you very much.
Chair, on the market, on the property portfolio, we're looking at about 2.8 billion in terms of the property portfolio. And there are certain, we will never dispose the core. We'll focus on the non-core, and the board will also have to satisfy themselves, and then we'll deal with the disposal. But the strategy is to actually look at partnerships, core development, sale to lease concept and everything. So until the strategy is presented to the incoming board in terms of how we're going to deal with that, we will then come back to the portfolio committee in that regard. Honourable Mackenzie, the resist building that was, there was one that was burnt down, which was actually a lease from DPW. It was never the post office one. And then the other one in Marshalltown is the one that the post office is going to be refurbishing. Remember when we're still DOC with the Telkom being part of us, some of the properties went with Telkom, others with us. And the relationship, likewise, and they've just paid us last year 8 million rent in terms of some of the buildings. They lease some of us, we lease some of them. But the issue of the refurbishment, we have about 569 million that has been set aside to just deal with that. And we will be coming back to the committee to just give a perspective of in each and every province, how far we at, where are we at, and also the tier level of the tier one, which is a smart office, the functional, convenient. So those are the kind of segmentation matrix that we'll be sharing with the committee and moving forward. Yes, we do our benchmarking. The reporting that we do is actually automated. And if you go to a UPU platform, as a country, we are part of the 192 countries. So all our standards and everything is actually reported there. There are quarterly reviews that are shared with all the member countries, and we also are benchmarking and looking at and also looking at where we are falling short, what we need to do to improve around those issues. So basically the benchmarking is around the scanning, is about our money transfer, the data corridor, the data exchange, and the security component. So we are mindful of that. And our role really is to make sure that with the institutional memory and the technological know-how and the technical know-how, how do we begin to also play a central role in the regional integration? That's why we've resuscitated our aggressive presence within the SAPOA space. We've resuscitated the relationship we are leading there, the work that we did with the third extraordinary congress in Geneva, where developing countries played a very critical role in asserting themselves within the UPU staff. That is why the tariff models, they move from the flow rate of 2.8 to 23%. We wanted 48, but we believe that the voice of the developing country through the work that as South Africa we're leading with our counterparts in the region and the entire continent, Chairperson. So we'll continue to do that. But yes, we do benchmark with international postal agencies. Yes, they are developed, and they are developing, and also in terms of the best models and lessons learned, and we tap into the strength on the market research that is done through the UPU, so we have access to that, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a question about the need to make the post office a safe, post office. I wanted to indicate that We have made a presentation on slide number 15. However, I wanted to indicate that based on the available resources, financial resources, post offices have been categorized in terms of levels of risk. And I want to give you an example. You know, I'm part of the investigating team on the young lady that was murdered, and we had to do in loco inspection. We went to the Clarence post office, and it is one of the post offices that was found not to be a high risk one for the following reasons. And we saw it. There's a police station just a block away. There's a school next door, and so forth. So in order for us to be able to roll out these sort of things, we have to begin somewhere, the high risk areas and so on. So we got surprised that this thing hit us where we thought it was safe and so forth. So we are, you know, as you can see on slide 15, it's an attempt to actually begin to also put in CCTV cameras and to make sure that if something happens, we can be able to track and trace the criminals or people like that. Thank you.
Chair, yes, we've done the skills audit, and we are mindful of where the shortage, the skill gaps are. And as I've indicated, in terms of enabling and building a capable digital workforce, the work that we're going to be doing with NEMISA to actually build the digital workforce in the post office. But at EXCO level, there will be other positions that will be required to be filled from external chair. But our rationalization and the optimization is really guided by the principle of tapping internally and reskilling and ensuring that there's business continuity, Jefferson. Thank you.
I think the last one, Jefferson, was on the net asset value for postmen. I think to this end, Jefferson, we can actually involve and engage our department, our shareholders, to look onto what is the result of the restructuring, what is the funding model that can be implemented going forward. I think we're going to have a discussion. I'm not going to try to answer it now, but we're going to discuss. We were successfully engaged in getting the restatement of the public service money. I'm sure this one, again, we're going to get it right. Thank you very much.
Sure. Maybe to add on the stuff for the post-bank separation and our sustainability going forward. I know that the department has started to engage with National Treasury to look at frameworks like the PPP, that will assist us to get partners that will help us to be financially sound and help us to invest and fund some of our programs, and also to look at SAPO getting an exemption you know, when you look at the PFMA, so that will enable us to be able to engage external partners. That meeting took place yesterday, although it's still very much a high-level meeting focusing on high-level issues. But I know that the team will compile a report and they will engage SAPO, and together with the department will identify areas where we need this partnership to enable us to be sustainable, to enable us to be a going concern. And I guess as the discussions unfold, we'll also report to this forum. And also the department is helping us to see where we can obtain an exemption that will enable us to obviously engage external parties, but especially where we have external competition, you know, where we need to move fast, we need to be agile in order to respond to providing our services and to become profitable. So, but we get guidance from our DG, we get guidance from our minister in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the JMC, Honourable Mackenzie, the conveyor belt story is a very interesting one, because we got the money through the QSF Quality of Service Fund from the UPU. It was put in place, but it never worked. It was never functional. And we had to put together a report to UPU to have it by the board endorsed and approved to close that project, because it became a fruitless expenditure. So what we asked our production engineers to do was to look at how we can actually optimize and utilize it. But the way it was done, Chair, because it's supposed to move the goods and services in an automated to make it easy from an economics point of view, and I don't know what happened in the past. So what we wanted to do was to take some component of it get the production engineer to relay, to do a layout in terms of space optimization, because how JIMC is supposed to be structured and laid out, it must be on par with the other offices of exchange. Because remember, from an operations blueprint point of view, we've actually ring-fenced Cape Town International, Joburg International, and Durban International as part of the office of exchange to lay a foundation for operational readiness for e-commerce. So the issues of infrastructure and how we are actually laying out from a production engineer, we have to make sure that the warehouse is on par with best practices. And that we will be sharing also with the office moving forward. The issue of the platform, earlier on, I think if you look at the way forward on the slide, we talk about decommissioning some of the IT softwares and everything, because in the past there were solutions for members, not things that serve the best interest of the organization. So we had, there were certain licenses that were bought 2007 to last year that were never utilized. There will be change requests that are made, they are not being implemented. So the recoveries and the financial misconduct issue, we are zooming into all those issues. And then we needed one platform that will integrate everything, because there must be a single view to the business. So in essence, that's what this enterprise platform is supposed to be achieving for us, Chairperson. So that's what basically it means. So everything will be plugged and played into that. So the finding, Chairperson, is basically, I can just read it verbatim, but it's actually prohibiting Postnet from encroaching with immediate effect, and they are supposed to be reporting within 30 days to the committee, because there's a mediation committee which deals with such issues in terms of the ICASA. So they also, we also have the finding, we can share it with the committee, but also they also have received the finding through the CCC within ICASA chain. Thank you, Chair. We have yes, we do. We did appoint Squealy Media to assist us as a reputation management a company with Mira PR that are helping us with the reputation management issues. And then obviously we needed to also wait for the incoming board to also be part of this, because this is a very important messaging, and there's work that we're going to be doing during the month of November, which is a 16 days of activism. We are partnering with the national department also in terms of that national campaign around the GBV chair. But over and above that, there's just extensive work that we're doing around the brand repositioning, the image, the message management, and also capacitating our presence across all touch points using social media, print media, above and below the line platforms. Chair,
we want to do some closing points, or do you want to do that before the
We'd also like to appreciate the input from Honorable Mugwena around the data vault, and I think that's what Trust Center as a platform is supposed to be achieving, and moving forward. But also the strategy is about us being the front end, having a back end integration with all critical players in government, MVL for DOT, transport, effects and everything, because that's how we strategy say to it says we want to be a trusted partner in terms of messaging, in terms of information, in terms of parcel and the like. So it dovetails nicely. Thank you so much. So we'll be updating the committee on the implementation.
And before the chair, Honorable Mulala and Honorable McKenzie just wanted to be clear on the answers given, just to be sure that Honorable Mulala.
Yeah, no. Thanks, Chair. I'm clear with the answers. I just wanted to check if it's possible, because I said today I want to be very different and supportive. Next time I'm not going to be. In terms of security, in most areas, they are community-based structures. Is it not possible for you to get them to participate in the pursuit, maybe in the form of, I don't know if you, because I know you're a going concern, but you could have some form of a local board that includes the chief, FGB, or the community police, a committee at that level, because that will help you a lot in terms of managing security, because it's local people, they will know what happened. Rather than paying, looking for security campaign, all post office is going to be more costly. I don't know, I'm just making that suggestion to you. It's up to you, but next time if there's no security, I'm going to be hard to do something. Thank you.
Honorable McKenzie?
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Just one clarification question and one comment. Just to revisit the Weir Park post office for a minute, where the air conditioners weren't working. I also took a walk around the side where the post boxes are. There was an elderly Afrikaans woman that was selling some stuff. There was an elderly Tswana guy who was selling some brooms. There was a younger guy a little bit further down. They were all in the post box section, sheltering there, selling their wares. I understand informal traders have a living to make. I just wonder if they should do it on the post office premises. And then if you walk at the back of the post office, and please do this when you go there, you'll see the palisade fence is broken, and there's a taxi rank just beyond that side. So there's fires and stuff. In the middle of the night, to drag a woman through that broken palisade fence, you can do it like that. So just that. And then when you, my clarification question, the Marshalltown post office, is that the one we're talking about, the historic building that burnt out and the roof has been redone? And Telkom has given you $30 million towards the refurbishment of that, is that correct? When are you going to refurbish it? Thank you, Chair.
We will just deal with those two questions and then get the Chair to.
Thank you, Chair. We appreciate that. I think the public realm management, it should be something that is key focus area for the facilities management team. And not only within our post office, but even the outside post office, because at our advanced post, someone threw a stump and there was the grass because it overgrown verge. It started burning and we had lots of trash there. It almost created a catastrophe. So we are mindful of that, and that's the work that the facilities management team is supposed to be doing. Chairperson, the issue, the 30 million rand was as a result of the buildings that were leased by Telkom. So there were some outdated, they were not up to date in terms of the lease payment, and we've been asking for money and they finally settled that bill. So this one, this building, is the one that we are leasing through them, and the refurbished work should be part of the lease agreement in terms of enabling that. Ideally, because it's so iconic, we'd like that to happen. And I think the relationship that we forged with Telkom on other strategic issues that we share when the board has solidified that is ready to share. Because the issue for us is that when the separation happened, remember, post office by their nature, they used to be a place, it becomes a landmark to tell a person next to the post office building. So all the iconic heritage type of sites, they should be belonging to us. And those are the kind of relationship where we can even do land swap. To retain and be part of that brand repositioning. So those are the kind of things we'll be exploring, Chairperson. But the issue of safety is something that is of paramount importance. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. In my closing remarks, I just want to acknowledge Honorable Mukwena, if he's awake. Oh, you're on the phone, okay. But you've made a very interesting point on the South Korea. We are aware of the models that have been working throughout the world, and we appreciate that. But we're also aware of models of post offices that are working without owning a bank, but having access, you know, to the license and the banking facilities, which is what, through our SLA and our management agreements with the Post Bank, we do have. So we're able to provide all of those services without having the, I don't want to put it a burden, but having the responsibility of running and owning a bank and all the regulations that goes with it. So we will not drop any services that will require a banking license because we've got a sister company. And finally, just to acknowledge Honorable Kubeka, thank you so much for your comments. we are really conscious that we critical to the service delivery for government. We are really the touch points in many areas where our people are, in the rural areas, in the remote areas. So in our strategy, in how we conduct ourselves, in the programs that we're going to do, in also addressing our properties and pay points, etc., we keep that in mind, that we represent the arm of government, really. Chair, I just want to thank you again for the opportunity to present to you and for the questions from all the members. Thank you.
Honourable members, that takes us to the end of that first item. We will then await the reports that we had asked for in terms of timelines and our post program, including the refurbishment side now for things, so that members would be aware well in advance which post offices are targeting, so that that communication also goes to communities before there are problems. So I think there's an understanding on that. We must thank you once again. I think you got the sense. We give you the benefit of doubt that what you would have said, you're a new board, you would want to prove us wrong. And we'll give the necessary support to support as the committee, because our interest is to serve the people of the country. The collective, that's what we committed ourselves to, and we'll just do that. Thanks for that. Of course, I know that the department will be ready now. May I also request honorable members? So the department is not new. So it's not like having a new board. So it'll be a bit tight, DG. A bit tight of time. Because there's also a sitting too. So I'm looking at the time. We indeed, by 1 o'clock, you must be done with the presentation, so that it allows us an engagement not later than the first one. We should be out to allow members to have whatever they want to do. Getting out before our first one is even more desirable from where we are. Now, I'm raising this, honorable members, because you have had the presentation. Probably next time we'll get to a point where we don't get to the presentation if we receive them, but get to the actual engagement, so that we spend time with people. But we must appreciate that the department has put together this presentation in response to the matters that you have raised in the committee. And thanks for taking those questions also so that you respond to them. So we'll give the department to do the usual, not the whole presentation, but the minutes and from the presentation, and we can then take an engagement. If there are pressing matters to the board or staff and so on, you will do that nicely without disrupting the meeting. It's still a portfolio committee meeting, not the board meeting.
Thank you, Chair. I noticed in a very self-deprecating way the way the SOPA chairperson spoke about her PhD, and I would urge you to finish that PhD, as I would urge anybody else in this room who might be in the way of getting their PhD to finish it too. Thank you, Chair. I'm sure that person knows who I'm talking
about. And I take it that this is not about dislodging anyone who's going to make any presentation. In this house. So I'm not referring to anyone in myself. Just saying that I hear. Please allow us to get the presentation.
Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Okay, I'm going to run through the presentation. Let me start with the structure issues very quickly. Honorable members, we still remain two separate departments under one minister. This will continue to be so until the end of March, meaning that from the 1st of April 2020, we'll then be one department. Now, the two departments are already cooperating, and we do this through memos because we are still separate entities. So when it's done, we sign a memorandum of understanding so that we can facilitate a cooperation between the two departments. Then there are also colleagues who are acting in the two departments. For example, the DDG next to me is responsible for agency oversight in the two departments. We also
We have the same situation in HR and also in legal. We have advanced cooperation in international relations. To the extent that when we send a delegation, we send one delegation, no longer two delegations. The departments are now located in one office at the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Service, so that has already been done. The transfer of the three entities, as honorable members are aware, has taken place effectively, although the vote is still... Okay. So we have also done that, as the honorable members will know, and it has obviously implications for this committee as we informed previously. The startup structure has been done. The only delay with the structure is that it's supposed to be submitted to the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Now, honorable members, this has not been done. The reason being that in the issuing of proclamations that enabled the merger and the reconfiguration, it so happened that the transfer of CETA to our minister was not included, essentially by the Department of Public Service and Administration. So we have been engaging on this matter, and hopefully it will be resolved soon. Now, if it is not resolved, it has serious implications because we have not submitted all the information on the structure to the Department of Public Service and Administration, which in turn must submit the same to the Department of National Treasury. So that has not happened. And it's a matter that we are currently dealing with. Up to this point, the DG, myself, DG Public Service, and the DG President have been dealing with this issue, and it's being escalated because it has not been happening. Now, just maybe to contextualize this further, the issue of CETA location was not supposed to be met in the measures of the department. It's not supposed to be on the table. But it so happened that our colleagues at DPSE chose to use this process to also deal with the CETA matter. It's a matter that we've been dealing with as to where CETA should be located, whether CETA should continue to be located with us or with the Department of Public Service and Administration, as was the case before 2014. So that's where we are with the process. Then the other matter relates to vacancies in the department, particularly the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. In the presentation, we list all the vacancies that are there. We have advertised all of them, and we'll soon be conducting interviews. Hopefully, by the end of this calendar year, we should have concluded in that process. So we are paying attention to that, and the process is being expedited. Then the next issue is with regard to DGT. I need to indicate to honorable members that we are focusing on this matter. We are paying attention to this important issue because it has implications for the spectrum licensing. Because part of the spectrum that we say we want to license is the spectrum that is currently occupied by the broadcaster. So we want to take that spectrum and give it to the telcos that is still occupied by the broadcaster. So the broadcasters must migrate back before we can give it to the telcos. What that means is that we will conclude the licensing process that ICASA is undertaking even before the spectrum is vacated by the broadcaster, which is going to be a big challenge because then you license something that is not readily available. So the matter that we are addressing, one of the interventions, Chair, if I can indicate, we initially allocated 1 billion for broadband purposes. And because of the current fiscal challenges, we then agreed that that money can be used to expedite in GDP, and we would engage with the DBSA to offset that money for the money for the broadband services. So that is one of the interventions that we are putting in place to ensure that we expedite DBT. There are some top boxes that are currently with the post office. We would also expedite the release of those set of boxes to the priority provinces so that we can conclude that the stock. So that while we plan for the future, at least we must be working on the basis of what is currently available. With regard to state entities that have been mentioned in the report, of particular interest to members, I wish to believe, one, I'll start with the broadband in Fargo. Brockman and Sako has been included in the report for the reason that they owe us is 1.3 billion. Now they owe us an IDC. When this entity was created, there was money that was appropriated by the country. But it so happened that the then Minister of Public Enterprises treated that as a loan to the company. Meanwhile, in the actual appropriation, it was not supposed to be a loan. It was supposed to be a grant. So that is what we are rectifying now. On our side, we have already done that. We have already returned to BBI indicating that you don't owe us. We will then review the decision of the Minister of Public Enterprises, so to say, so that this money is treated as a grant in your books. So similarly, we have asked the IDC to do the same, and we are informed by colleagues from IDC that the board of IDC will be meeting on the 28th of November, and a decision will be taken on this matter. So we should be able to come back to Parliament at a later stage to update you on this issue. Then as regards to the post office, I will not regurgitate what has been said, honourable members, but safe to indicate that the reform that is taking place in the post office is twofold. One, it entails what we're already going to do irrespective of who is the bank controlling a company. And that is to establish the Post Bank as a company on its own, even if it's a subsidiary of SAPO. Because prior to April, the Post Bank was just a division of the Post Office. So the bank license can't be issued to a branch of the Post Office. It can only be issued to an entity. So what we have done now, we have created that entity. It has its own board, but it remains a subsidiary of the Post Bank. Now there is another matter that we are grappling with, and that entails what is said in the amended Banks Act. The amended Banks Act says that even though state-owned enterprises will be allowed to hold banking licenses, they must be adequately capitalized. Now we have dealt with the capitalization of SAPO in the last 3 to 4 years, and that entails the injection of about 8 billion into SAPO. The net effect, as members were asking now, is that if we were to get SAPO to be the bank controlling company, one of the things that we need to do, you will have to capitalize the SAPO in a very short space of time, because we want to expedite the licensing of the Post Bank. We definitely want to do this. Now, the reality of the situation is that it doesn't seem possible that we'll be able to get 4 to 6 billion in the next few months. It doesn't look very likely. And that explains the answer that the chair of the board provided to the effect that we are trying to look at other mechanisms of ensuring that SAPO survives with or without that separation. But now that we know that the separation is very likely, we have started to engage in trade so that we explore other options to ensure that in the event of that separation, SAPO is not compromised. I'll ask DDG Shalembe to deal just with the ECBC issues, and then we can take questions.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am also going to just run through the presentation, taking for granted that the QCC has been read. The update is after the allocation of the 3.2 billion to the SABC from the contingency reserve, we have transferred 2.1 billion to the SABC upon assessment of the extent to which they have met the precondition. There is still an outstanding 1.1 billion to be transferred, which is subject to the ultimate compliance to all the preconditions. We are in consultation with both the SABC and the National Treasury on a continuous basis to reach an agreement and make sure that the SABC indeed complies to this. In terms of the understanding, this money is at the latest due by end of March next year to the SABC, but we would like to transfer it as early as possible upon compliance. The issue relating to the turnaround strategy of the SABC, this strategy has indeed now been developed. with the assistance of the Government Technical Advisory Center, GTEC, based in Treasury, which was a service enlisted by the department to support the SABC. We are now in the process of monitoring the implementation of the strategy as the department together with Treasury. In the turnaround strategy, there are targets to be implemented over what we call the very immediate term, which is within the 0 to 3 months of the implementation of the strategy. Some require implementation over a short-term period, which is defined as within 12 months, and the rest are within the 36-month period, which we call the medium term. So in terms of the preconditions, there were 9 altogether from Treasury, 6 of which have now been fully met, 2 are partially met, and 1 still remains work in progress to do towards even partially meeting. We are still confident with the work we are doing with the SABC that all the remaining 3 will be fully met before the end of the financial year. We had a meeting with Treasury last week on the 6th of November to again assess where we are with respect to the SABC. The next matter we address in the presentation relates to the resignation of the COO, or of the resignation of Dr. Craig Van Roy, and he was at the time acting COO. He cited personal reasons for his resignation in terms of his letter of resignation, and we are happy to report that the board has since recruited a replacement in the name of a new COO, Mr. Ian Clarkis, which has been appointed with effect from 1st of November. There is an issue relating to the proposed increase in license fees. This issue came to the attention of the minister at the time when the SABC board was not correlating. And now that we have a full board in the SABC, the matter has been reverted to them to consider before approaching the minister for approval. On the issue relating to studies with respect to TV license fees collection, we are informed the SABC is ready to make a full presentation to the committee upon an invitation by the committee. Issues relating to board issues, indeed, one member of the SABC board wrote to the minister informing about the relations within the board, and the minister subsequently forwarded that information to the board, but also indicated she was still going to give that member full audience so that she understands what was happening. The matter now is going to be handled by the Deputy Minister, who has since been delegated the responsibility of looking after the SABC, and we can then report on the developments subsequent to such engagement. You want me to go to ICASA? With respect to ICASA, the main issue had to do with the litigation performance agreement and spectrum. With respect to performance management system of ICASA, we happy to inform ICASA will brief the committee on the 26th of November in terms of the current program, and we're hoping that then by the 1st of April 2020, the new or revised performance management system will be implemented. There was an issue about the minister exercising oversight over ICASA and other entities. We happy to inform that then with the signing of the new performance management system, then that will be in place. And with respect to other entities, the minister signed shareholder compact and other accountability instruments with all the entities residing in her portfolio. Sports rights regulations. At one point, there was a program which said ICASA will brief again the committee on the 19th of November 2019 on sports rights regulations. that is deemed on course on the ICASA side, and on issue relating to spectrum in particular, or generally on all the issues relating to impasses with ICASA, the minister continues to hold bilateral meetings with the council, and all the matters that are listed as performance agreement, litigation, and spectrum application or licensing are dealt with. The minister has issued the policy directive on spectrum release, and ICASA has started working on this. Initially, ICASA had funding challenges with respect to executing this task. We have now availed additional funding to ICASA to proceed with the implementation of this exercise. We continue to monitor and oversee all our entities with respect to irregular expenditure, as well as issues relating to consequence management, as well as just ensuring that they indeed implement budget action plans relating to AG binding. BBI, the DG, has touched on check. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just the last issue I deliberately left out. The issue of Mr. Mazal, his resignation. I need to indicate to honourable members that in the last 3 to 4 years, we have experienced a number of things. There was a resignation of the CEO, Mr. Mahathir, who said the election. There was a resignation of Kulele at BBI, who sent a notice. We then had this situation of Mr. McCarthy, who said, I'm resigning with immediate effect. So when people resign and ask to serve notices, we have allowed people to do so, to serve notices. We also had the resignation of the end of the contract of the CEO of the software. So overall, in the we have expressed such changes. We always best manage those changes, particularly when people ask to serve a notice, which is usual, what do we have in our contract. But then, if someone says to you that I'm resigning with the immediate effect, then that does not allow you to, you know, a room to maneuver or to even engage. So all we can report to this committee is that, to the best of our knowledge, Mr. Vance resigned and his reasons for resignation as effective later. And as I've indicated, it was with immediate claim. Thank you.
Honorable members, you have the presentation. If there are any other issues you want to clarify, otherwise, we'll take into account the other presentation. Can I then take Honorable Chamber, Honorable Kako, Honorable McKenzie, Honorable Kwena, Honorable Malala? Okay,
that's right. Thank you once again, Chapter 3. Irizini noma imbangela yokuzivana kwa yini mhlambe eyenza ba resign kangaka. Nokuthi mhlambe bake bayenza yini mhlambe case study yokuthi balandelele ukuthi why they are resigning belandelana kangaka.
I also welcome the presentation, Chair. I also wanted to put a finger on the final things on the amalgamation issues, just to emphasize the importance of continuous engagement on this issue of transferring the data, that there should be continuous engagement between the two political principals and also DG to DG. I just want to put an emphasis on that. The other point is, Chair, I just want to put it up front that our support as the committee to the bailout with regards to SABC board was based on full compliance by the SABC board on the preconditions that were set by National Treasury. I think they must be persuaded to finish up that assignment so that the remaining amount be also transferred. Otherwise, we will not vouch for them again if they don't keep up to the promise. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, to Ms. Nkuna. Can you just clarify for me, has it been established that CETA is actually going with this department, or is it staying with, or is it going to go to Public Service and Administration? Do we have clarity on that? Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
No, yeah, a couple of questions. One on SARPO, the 4.2 billion. What were the preconditions that could not be met, or why is it that it wasn't possible to capitalize SARPO? That's one. Two. The resignation of Macron. So you know, I think we're over that now. So. What do we do now going forward? How do we fast track the process of making sure that we have a permanent person? We have capable people already here, so you know, the longer we keep them in an acting position, becomes an issue. So how do we fast track the process of permanent Then on the SABC, so we put these measures, DDG round. We put these conditions for the SABC. The SABC has come here to the committee and said that some of them it's actually impossible for them to meet. So for instance, the issue of selling off some of their assets. They've come here and said it's going to be impossible, and we're relying on a report that they were assisted by GTEC, which is not an expert in anything. In fact, they rely on service providers, some of whom provide services to their competition, to MultiChoice. So what measure do we use? How do we say the 2.1 that we've given is equal so much compliance, and therefore this is how much you need to comply with the model to give us this much? Because the reason why I'm raising this is because we're constantly stifling the SABC based on conditions that I'm not even sure is going to assist them. We've had the inquiry here. We've given some of the conditions. They were complying, to my knowledge, to a certain extent. So why are we still punishing them, is my question. And then the increase of licensing fees. I don't know, Chair. Maybe it's something that we need to talk about, because we're already not meeting targets, you know. Why are we increasing fees when the poorest of the poor have said that these things are too much for them? When we should be looking at other revenue streams. And then spectrum, DG Ngun. You know, spectrum has always been an issue, but I think it came up. It emerged as a sore point when the data must fall issue came up. And I think it was then used by service providers, by mobile service providers, to deviate from some of their responsibilities. And one of the responsibilities that they were given as a license requirement, you are required to give internet service, free internet service to schools. In the beginning it was 5,000 schools, It was then reduced by ICASA, we don't know through what process, to 1,500. They've still not met those numbers. So what is the department doing in terms of ICASA, in pushing ICASA to make sure that the service providers meet those numbers? So that spectrum is a separate issue, and it must be still accepted. But they must still comply. Thanks.
I think I'm partly covered by Honorable Mkwena on the last point, but I think there's one issue that I wanted to raise, because I think it's creating a misunderstanding. The accountability lies, because you see, our role as Parliament is to do oversight, both the department and the entity. There's an oversight body or committee in the department. How do we streamline that so that what they do does not necessarily replicate what we're doing? Maybe have a separate session with the team before we meet with the entities, but I think we need to streamline that area, because I'm worried we were doing a sort of a duplication. So I thought that's the first point. The second point is on the SABC board, the report that you're providing in terms of their internal process, because the last time we were with the SABC, they raised that issue that on this, it's not only SABC, on this entity, the both ICASA and so on, there, this issue of being independent, they must be allowed to operate independent. At the same time, there's also an argument whether they, on some issues, they account to the minister, on some issues, they account to us. That also, I think, needs to be cleared on both sides. But the last point is on the post-bank support saga. My request is that can we have the departmental plan on that issue? Because it has been raised quite a number of times in the committee. Let's have a plan so that we're clear if they are separating, how they are separating, if they are merging, how they are merging. Let's have a clear plan as a committee so that we can do the proper monitoring. Because it's not our call to decide whether they are merging or they are. We can express our views. But at least if we have a plan, we are able to then monitor and follow up on each and every step that they take. If it's a plan that we think is not viable, we'll also raise our voice at that time, say, hey, but we don't think this is a workable plan, this is experience of other countries, if it's workable. And maybe the last point, because there's a too much reliance on treasury, and I have a concern on that, because you see treasury, the key point issue is finances. They give you conditions based on the money they have and the allocation they do, because which is quite fair. But in terms of the content process, how then do we separate the two? Because otherwise we'll be forever held hostage, because everything we do, then the treasury comes in. If treasury is not coming in, then we're in trouble. So we just need to clear that as well, so that yes, in terms of the finances, it's their responsibility. If you want money from them, they must tell you, we can only give you money if you do that. If you are sure that that money, you're not going to come back and say, I've chowed all the money, I need another one.
But in terms of content, we need to be emphatic in terms of content to say, if Treasury gives you money, this is what you're going to do. And our role then is how do we monitor that part of the content so that you deliver on what you promise. But I think it's a very dicey situation, but we need to look at it as well from my point of view. Thanks, Chair.
Just on that point, Chair, I need to reiterate that point. You see, because it's understandable for finance to say that we need to manage the financial management of the departments and essential needs. It's another issue for them to direct the manner in which they run those institutions. Because I'm looking at the SABC, I'm looking at SAPO, the manner in which they have to rely on Treasury's business plan. It makes no sense. It looks like, you know, the Department of Communications is being run at the desk of the Department of Finance.
So the DG would be to make some responses. But just so that we don't lose other people, in case your phone is missing, please consult the secretariat here. I just hope it's not someone who's left with it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, just make sure. Oh, it is found.
Okay.
I just wanted to be sure. So that I don't get involved in the corruption.
I'll run through some of the questions. I think the issue around conditions that are exposed when the funding is given is something that, as we read in the news, is now a commonplace across all entities, whether it's ESCOM, SAA, and so on. So Treasury would always argue that there should be conditions, and most of the time we participate in the engagement around the conditions that are being set on the entities, and DDG can confirm in the specific case of the ACPC what the issues were. But generally the understanding is that as government, not just in Treasury versus us, we must put conditions on the entities that must be considered. And DDG can share a specific case study of the SABC as this was dealt with. We agree that we will come back with a plan on the post-bank supplement, which will then indicate that if we do this, these are the implications and these are the plans to mitigate those implications. So that is noted. On the issue of oversight, the Parliament versus the executive, I think this cuts across all the departments, and I think that now maybe the system of government and governance has been structured in that way, that at some level, the executive will also exercise its own oversight. Now, for the minister to do so has to rely on the internal capacity of the department to be able to support the minister. So it's a very broad discussion that has to do with the way our government is structured. That Parliament exercises its oversight, but also the executive has its own responsibility. On spectrum licensing conditions, I think that this is also a subject matter for discussion on the state of universal service obligation, to say that maybe ourselves and the CASA come back to the committee to say, in the last few years, how many obligations have been imposed on the companies, and what is the state of implementation of those obligations. Because as we license new spectrum, there are new obligations that will have to come. So Parliament may be interested, as I listen to the question, in understanding how have we done in the past. So that as we move to a new regime of obligations, at least we learn from our own experiences. So we can answer very specific questions. And also when CASA comes here, those questions can be answered. Now, I need to indicate that we always take active interest as the department, and we have been engaging with the CASA that they must improve their universal service obligation. For example, the broadband project that we are running as a department says that we must connect 10 megabits per second. But the CASA the obligations are less than what is in SA Connect. So the covers on the obligations have to be aligned with the set of the SA Connect. There are issues around the quality of devices and so many other issues, but Chair, I'll ask that the discussion cannot be speculative so that we can come back with a specific response and indicate where we are in the implementation of universal e-service obligation. On the appointment of the CEO of SAPO, as indicated, there is a new board. There are a number of vacancies at SAPO, and the new board is going to prioritize the filling of the vacancies, including that of the CEO. Now, on the 4.2 billion that was referred to, that was mentioned in the SAPO presentation as a possible shortfall as a result of the envisaged change. And that's the matter that all of us are looking at. So, in the last 3 to 4 years, we have supported the SAPO to a tune of 8.2 billion. But what is being said now is that with the envisaged separation of SAPO and the Post Bank, there will be another hole opening on the side of SAPO. And how are we going to deal with it? So that is going to be part of the plan that has been asked by the honorable member. Chair, on the issue of SICA, the SICA since its establishment was located at DPSA. And in 2014, it was moved to DGCA. And the understanding at the time was that you can't separate government digital transformation from the digital transformation of society. And that it would make perfect sense to have SITA locating with all the other ITT companies, as it is currently the case in the department. And we've been grappling with this issue of whether it's possible to have a strategy for the country and a strategy for government as separate strategies. And as we check with other countries, we find that there is no country where you would have South African strategy and government strategy, because government strategy is always an integral component of a country's strategy. So we have advanced this discussion. We'll soon be coming to Parliament to assess with a new bill, with a new SITA bill, that will then deal with the challenges that we face with this entity. As aware that many departments have been complaining about SITA. And we've been working on a project to ensure that we refreshing SITA also to deal with the changes in technology. So that work is continuing. And at the DG level, what we have agreed as DG in a meeting chaired by the DG in the president, first was that the reconfiguration process that government is currently implementing was not mandated to deal with the location of entities. That was not the mandate of it. And the DG in the presidency has returned to the DG in public administration, indicating that the issue of SITA is not on the table. So SITA should be transferred to the Minister of Communications and Digital Technology. The reason why I still use the word transfer is because you are moving from the Minister of Communications to the Minister of Communications and Digital Technology. So the word transfer will still apply even in that case. Then the last issue is the resignation of CEO. I was deliberately mentioning this other CEOs just to say that Mark Burns is one of the many CEOs who have left the establishment. So if there's a discourse around why CEOs leave, we can have a process in discussion. But the other three that I referred to left because their contracts had expired. So meaning that in the portfolio, we had Sumo leaving SITA, Pudeng leaving BBI, Lumko leaving Mustafa. Now, this is the only resignation that was experienced. And as I've indicated, the resignation was very clear. I'm resigning with immediate effect. So that does not always give you a room to manoeuvre. And once again, I'll ask Chair for our indulgence for DDG to pick on some of the questions.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to limit my input basically on the SABC. The first issue perhaps I'll try to respond to is the one from Honorable Mukwege, which talks about the SABC indicating the impossibility of selling the non-core assets. For me and for us, really, as government, the main thrust of this precondition is not really about selling. It's not that we are dogmatically about selling. But we were putting this condition because we wanted the SABC to do a detailed assessment of itself today vis-a-vis the SABC of the future. I was lucky to sit in this committee when the current board members were being interviewed, and some of them were being asked, how is the SABC responding to new technologies like the OTTs, over-the-top technologies, and so on, out of the recognition that technology is impacting this business as well. So what we're saying here is do a careful and thorough assessment of what you have today and what you need going into the future. Even if that exercise may come back and say, we still need everything for these reasons, at least we will then say we have convinced each other that we have done that careful assessment. I think across the board of SOEs, really, the feeling is you need to look inside yourself as well. You can no longer just always come to government for bailout. What are you doing yourself to take yourself out of your position, even if some of that will include perhaps selling the non-core, and the emphasis is on non-core assets which you do not need to execute your primary mandate, even if it means bringing in private partners to co-invest with you on certain projects, and so on. So the issue really is, it's not that the Treasury is, or we are becoming a desk of the Treasury, we just run around and do that which they instruct us to do. But the truth of the matter is, if you are heavily indebted to your banker starts to tell you what to do or not to do. If these entities were performing such that they do not require Treasury, then Treasury would indeed be at that arm's length that is desirable, you know, to allow these entities to execute their mandate. But if they keep on coming back all the time seeking fiscal support, then Treasury starts to say, how do we stave this thing off? Otherwise, the liability emanating from SOEs is just becoming almost unmanageable. So I am happy to say now SABC no longer requires a persuasion to meet the condition. At least we are on the same page together. We have done a detailed analysis of their problems. They have acknowledged as part of their turnaround plan. It's just a question of executing and implementing those. So at least there is no squabbles there. We're working together now to do this. Thank you very much.
Just for a record on the position, that the total vacant position of the combined, when you combine the two departments, in the DTPS alone, we have advertised 12 in the SMS and one below in the SMS. So it's not all the position of the new department, but it's mainly on the DTPS side that we have. And the other thing due to financial allocation, that most of the positions at the GPS are funded in the position. You know what? That's about the way it is in those positions. And on that note, Chair, I'll just use this opportunity to thank the committee for the continued guidance and the fact that we are committed to always give the information and engage with the entities. But at some point, we also allow the entities to, we don't manage them, we allow them to come and express themselves so that we can hear from them as the people who exercise oversight of them. So we don't script them before meetings and say, we must say things the way we want to say things. But most of the time we need to be consistent because we are working together with the entities. So we do that and engage with the entities, but to an extent it is required, the entities will also give their views on certain issues so that the members can have a full picture. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, I think that there has been quite an effort to try and respond to your clarity question that you asked for. I know I said I've passed any stuff, but
yeah.
And I know that we still have minutes. We can move to the next meeting, that's the second page, so we can go through that. But there's only one thing we have for next week. So there's a letter now that comes through from discuss at this morning, which was not circulated to us, back to where we were, right? Not ready to present. So as I was listening to the department's report, I understood why Honorable Mulala was talking about the entity oversight side of the clerical, because you feed us the information that you have received, then they'll send it directly to us and say, no, look, we're not ready for that day. Elections report is not ready. Remember, elections report postponed it first time. Now it's for the second time, they are not ready. They are not ready with the sporting rights issue. So I'm just saying that it then says that there is a problem. But for those who understood the discussion we had about what happens in the intercommunity, I'm sure you understand it better. That we need to manage other things as we move forward. So I'm sure you understand that. But I'm not there yet. But I'm just saying we should be realistic about it. It therefore means that what we have is MTTA and probably, I think we need to, as I said, Honorable Mula, take this point with the department, especially the entity oversight, right, so that we are not getting surprised in the last minute that what we thought was the issue responded to. It gets to be something else. I know the part about independence. Honorable Mulala spoke to it, that sometimes that creeps in at a point, but it shouldn't creep in at certain instances, especially once it gets to accountability, because it shouldn't be like running away from accountability and then throwing that on the table. Because the committee is meant to also assist going forward. So I'm just saying, honorable members, that issue. So I thought I'd use a few minutes just to indicate that there is a challenge there, and we may need to look at that issue as a matter of patience. The point about GTEC, I think there's a sense which the committee has resolved, in any way responded to in the actual question, that we may need to have that meeting, because we never scheduled it in this term, so we have got something to prioritize before we even look at meeting treasurer and sample. I think the same thing. Get the plan before we can meet with treasurer, because there's nothing bad like going in front of treasurer and actually find that there's argument between treasurer and sample that this is the way to go, and the committee with the right to put them together. So I'm just saying we probably need to prioritize those for the next period. But we just need to state it to the council that we are not happy as a committee. And it can strain relations, I think, if we work in that way. Postpone, and in the last minute, when we have already prepared. Otherwise, we must really, once again, appreciate that you put an effort to answer to the questions and recommendations of the committee. Would expect that every time you make those contrary decisions, that you respond to our questions. They empower us as we get back to constituencies that we can respond to. Otherwise, honorable members, if you so agree, even minutes will take them to the other day, and that will complete the business.
Yeah,
thank you.
Just before you close, Chair.
Yes.
Many meetings that we are not in minister and deputy, I think it's very important that they must sometimes find time to come. They may not come all the time, but it must not be a long period without either minister of deputy. Because some of the questions, actually, we are raising them with officials when we're supposed to be raising them with the actual principal. But I'm not saying they are not busy. I'm just raising that concern for note.
No, honorable Mula, as you said, it's the last point you are raising for us to take forward. That's part of the oversight. The executive and must hold them accountable. Otherwise, honorable members, thanks for the contributions of my meeting. Thanks for the meeting.